everyone, and we're going to begin with the student leading the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Are there any agenda deletions, additions, or changes of sequence?
I'd like to move that we...
Go ahead.
That we...
You need to wait till later.
Kate.
I'd like to move that we move the board reorganization to the end of the agenda.
Second.
Any discussion?
Why?
To allow us time for a discussion.
Oh, okay.
Any other questions or comments?
So I have one quick question. So are you saying that following item 9.7, the tentative agreement, so I want to be very specific about
yes.
that.
Sorry.
Thank you. That's fine. I just wanted to verify.
Yes.
Thank you.
All right. There's a motion and a second. Are there any other comments or questions from the public?
Would you repeat the motion, please?
Certainly. My motion is to move the board reorganization to the end of the agenda, which would be after
9.3.7. But before the other meeting.
Yeah.
Correct.
Right, it would be part of this meeting. Okay. Is there a student recommendation?
Abstain.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstain?
Abstain.
Okay, so six.
And abstain is
Deb.
Okay, and student, thank you.
Right. All right, then we will be moving on. Superintendent comments?
None before public comments.
Okay. Public comments. We welcome you to come forward and speak to us. We'll listen carefully, but are not able to respond.
Good day. My name is Tim Madsen. I'm coming to you before you today speaking on behalf of some of the parent community of the comprehensive elementary schools. And we're concerned that plans are being made for the now vacant Natural Bridges campus without much input from the community. And we just want to make sure that any decision to commit the property for any specific tenant that may preclude its use for other purposes that students, families, and the community could benefit from is done openly. So we ask that if these decisions are considered, the public be made aware of them, provide adequate time to educate themselves, to consider respond to the district plans, and that time would allow the board to inform the public how the plan benefits students and the community, and explain the impact of those decisions on the still present concerns that we have about overcrowding in elementary schools. Thank you.
Other comments? Okay, so our next item will be number 6, Superintendent's Report.
Good evening. This week we've continued our work on the Adult Education Consortium planning. Last week, Molly and I met with the adult education staff to answer the questions that we could at this point about transition planning for adult ed through the consortium's goal of creating one adult ed program serving all of Santa Cruz County. Yesterday, Lisa Boschnick and I met with Dorma Baker and the directors of adult education in Pajaro Valley to begin discussing the transition plans. And we had collected questions and concerns from the teachers that we could bring to that conversation. We will meet again right after the holidays, and I really just appreciate the nature of this collaboration and the focus on but really preserving and protecting the adult education programs we have across the county and really looking to assess needs and how we're looking at doing this through the consortium and the collaborative and creating pathways that really lead into programs at Cabrillo and other adult education opportunities in the community. When we have more of the details settled, probably second semester sometime, we'll bring a specific report to the board, but I wanted to just give you an update on that process. On Monday, the SELPA was conducting interviews for the SELPA director position. The SELPA is our special education local plan area. And for us, it's a North County SELPA. It includes all the school districts in the county except for Pajaro. We've been without a director since June when our director retired. We didn't end up having qualified candidates in the first round of interviews. The purpose of the SELPA is to coordinate with school districts and the County Office of Education to provide a continuum of program and services for our students with special needs from birth through 22 years of age. And my role on the SECA board is part of all the superintendents that are part of the SELPA have a role on the SECA board, and my role on the SECA board is to represent our interests in our district. We are the largest district in the SELPA. We have the most students participating in regional programs, and it was really important to me that I was able to participate in the selection process. I feel good about the candidates we were able to see, and I believe that the SECA board will be making final hiring decisions on Thursday. But I feel hopeful about it and would like to share with you some more information about the SELPA and the work that we're trying to do coming into the later in the school year. Last week, I was able to meet with Mayor Cynthia Matthews. I appreciated the opportunity to seek her feedback on our school district, talk about collaboration with the city, and our role as a school district in a larger community. Also last week, Dr. Fergus was here. He met with site and district staff to help us work on our response to intervention framework. He met with every secondary principal and RTI coordinator, as well as central office team, to talk about how we continue to improve that work. Next week on Monday, Barry and Robert and Molly and Jeremy and I are attending a state-sponsored workshop for unions and district leadership. And I've heard from Pajaro. Pajaro participated last year. That it was a really healthy workshop that helped district leaders and union leaders look at shared interest and how we work together on behalf of students. That's it for this evening. Thank you.
Thank you. Next item is the student representative report.
Okay, so Santa Cruz High has had a couple of big events in the past couple of weeks. Winter Musical has been casted, and rehearsals began this week. The musical also had a tech meeting today at lunch, and this is the first time we're using an online application for participating in the tech, in the interest of better organization, or so we hope. I also anticipate a really well-attended campus beautification at the Santa Cruz High campus this Saturday, because students who have to attend the Saturday school are being offered a double count for Saturday school if they participate in beautification, so it'll be nice to have a really clean campus next week. Our winter formal venue was announced, and it's going to be on January 30th at the Museum of Art and History, which is frequented by Santa Cruz High students. The choir concert was last night. I unfortunately couldn't attend, but I'm told it was tremendous. And some of my clubs had the opportunity to participate in the holiday parade last Saturday downtown, and even more will be participating in the club day this Friday. And I think both staff and students are looking forward to the upcoming winter break.
Thank you. Board member reports. Do you like to go first?
Yeah. No.
No? Okay.
You can go first.
What? No, I don't want to go first.
Oh my gosh. Oh, what a shy group. Jeremy, would you go first?
I wasn't expecting that.
One of the things that I'd like to to do is to thank Angela Meeker and Jennifer Wildman for doing what I and I think the vast majority of the board has asked for this year, which is to hear directly from teachers so that we can be informed of the strengths and the areas of the areas that we need to look at carefully and the areas that we need to improve on. And so we've heard informally from our science people, NGSS, and we've heard from our Walktree elementary school teachers, and we've heard from our EL teachers, and tonight we're going to hear from our RTI coordinators, and I'd like to thank them and have them stand up. Amy Spires from Leafboarding Middle, Kathleen Kennedy from Santa Cruz High, Lindsay Caruso from Mission Hill Middle, Mike Lynch from Harbor High School, and Steve McDowell from Soquel High School. I just got to thank you. I know how busy you all are, and that when I was a teacher, the last thing in the world I wanted to do was come to a school board meeting. But it's so important for us, for me speaking personally, to hear from you, to get your expertise, because if we don't know, you know, because you're right there in the classroom. And so thanks so much, and we're looking forward to hearing from you. That's my report. Thank you.
Okay, I had the opportunity. Had the opportunity to visit Mission Hill Middle School and some of their math classes. It was a Friday afternoon. It was the last period of the day, and I was happy to see the students engaged in their work and the collaboration across the board. All three classes were working within the same curriculum, and the same, though a bit of different approaches were being had. All the students seem to be grasping the same information, so I like to see that alignment. Also a science class, which was wonderful, and really enjoyed the pickleball going on in PE. It appeared that King of the Hill was really rock and rolling out there. Had the opportunity to attend the board buddy the board budget study along with the board budget advisory committee meeting, and I'd like to thank the elementary parents who came, the PTA parents who came and provided us with an overview of some of the areas that they'd like to see as the district, well, as the state, is crawling out from the economic downturn and monies are becoming more available, the direction they'd like to see in some of their comments. I'd like to invite everybody, as Ella did, not only to know that the students will get double time for the Santa Cruz High cleanup, but it's a parent-student combined cleanup, so if you'd like to. It's Saturday morning, the 12th at 8:30. They meet back, I forgot what the name of the street is, in the back of the school up there. And also that on the 12th, there is a, at Soquel High, a craft fair benefiting the Senior All Night. So all are welcome for that too. 11 to 3 in the multipurpose room.
Thank you.
Last week I had the pleasure to work with a group of cross agencies on the Youth Violence Prevention Strategic Task Force. The task force has gotten to a place where it is now divided into work groups, and I am co-chairing the work group on positive youth and child development with Jorge Zavala. Mm-hmm. And it was a very inspiring first meeting. Many of the strategies that are in the plan, I'm happy to report, are goals and strategies that we have in our district. And it is a collaborative effort to address youth violence. And it was great to see so many people coming together around that common cause and the agencies working together. And I'm happy to be on a part of it.
Last week, I attended the Positive Discipline Training Conference at the county office here, in fact, in this room. And it was basically focused on how to work with kids who have had trauma and the degree of trauma that exists in our children. And I found it to be really wonderful. I learned a lot and was very happy to hear those issues being put forth for us, all of us, to understand in the schools. I just spent 2 weeks getting the thing that everybody else has had. And so I was feeling bad that I hadn't done enough as a school board member. I was feeling bad at the moment that I was sitting with Allison at my kitchen table trying to dissect a budget. And then I realized that we had both also, and probably everybody else here, had had several conversations over the past week with parents and then with teachers and with administration. And I realized it was kind of interesting that we don't always say to the public that what's been institutionalized in our board is that we every month meet with the superintendent. We have direct and easy access to the assistant superintendent of education. We all argue our points and try to come to compromises. And we are so happy to have access to parents through emails and phone calls so that we can know what's going on. And there has been some of that this week, and I'm very happy about that, that we have parents who are willing to come forth and talk to us about what the problems are. So I think I wanted to say that this is my, I'm coming into my fourth year now. And this year, in terms of time spent trying to understand the whole school and bring together what's needed for the high schools, as well as the middle schools, as well as the elementaries, and trying to make sure that we don't make sudden decisions to help one group while another is suffering. The way in which we have tried to make it possible that we pay attention to everything has really pleased me. It's really been a lot of work. We've had a lot of board extra sessions in which we studied certain problems, and we feel that the work has paid off and that, I shouldn't speak for everybody, I feel that the work has paid off and that we are beginning to feel like we have a handle on the whole picture. So I wanted to put that out as what we do during a normal week, not because we're special, but because it is really a part of our daily lives and an important part. It's important to me to be able to have those conversations and to be able to work things out. And I also just wanted to say that one of the things that happened this week as elementary parents spoke up about some of their needs was that I immediately heard that high school parents were like, wait a minute, if they're going to speak up, we need to speak up. And I want to say that I think this is true for all of us here, but it's certainly true for me. You can email me anytime. You can call me anytime. And we all know that we have to be equally available and equally working to make the schools better across all of our schools. So I just wanted to say that. And thanks for the 3 years so far. Oh, I'm sorry. I did have one other thing I wanted to say. This is important. Mark Stone put on his legislative calendar AB 988, Outdoor Environmental Ed and Grants. The reason he did that is because the one thing, state ed code separates science camp from everything else in terms of that that the school districts are allowed to charge fees for science camp. And that's in the ed code. And he felt that the legislature needed to also come up with a way that for those schools who are lower income or have more lower income students, that there could be grants for them. So he put it on, and he was sure it was going through, it was charging right through, and it died in committee in August. So I actually talked to his legislative people today, and they said that he does not intend to have this die. He's going to figure out how to do it. He doesn't know if he's going to bring that bill back, but he is going to bring something back because he feels very strongly about it in terms of the weight on some PTAs versus others. So I asked, would it make a difference if we let him know how important it is to us and that we would be happy to help him, you know, lead the charge? And the person said, yes, it would make a difference. So I'm taking a moment to ask everybody here, especially the PTA people that are here, to think about passing that on to your schools and letting him know that you're available to support that, and that that he's going to have another session where he invites the public to come and meet him and try to figure out what kind of compromise would work that would get this through, and let him know if you're willing to be there for it. So now I'm done. Thank you.
Well, that was a perfect lead-in. I missed last week's meeting, the study session, because I was at the CSBA Delta Assembly when we were discussing and getting updates on pending and past legislature. And I've got actually brought to share with you all, if you want to take a look at recently passed assembly bills and Senate bills. We also had great conversations and gave direction to the governing board to continue advocating for adequacy and funding, and I brought their report on that as well. I'd like for you guys, everyone here should go on to the CSB site. Dr. Pedro Nogueira, that's how you pronounce his name, gave an amazing talk on equity in education and rethinking school reform. That was just really powerful. And we had a lot of great conversations about innovative ways to attract and retain teachers and the teacher shortage, and I'm really happy that we're having conversations about the possibility of teacher housing, because that seems to be a trend that other districts are pursuing, so we might have partners in that. And that's about it for me.
I also attended, went with Patty and Jeremy and Chris to Mission Hill and enjoyed attending the math classes. I learned something from your students, so they're pretty impressive. And it was a Friday afternoon after lunch, and they were on it, so I was impressed by that as well. I too attended the budget study session and the BAC meeting, and I too want to thank the parents for presenting their interest and their concerns with us. And I was just really impressed with how well the PTOs and PTAs across the elementary schools are collaborating and kind of comparing notes and sharing best practices. I think that's a wonderful model. And I wish I had known about that when I was working at B40, because I think it's a great way to see how we can collaborate across school sites and see where the shared concerns are and then see where the unique concerns are for the different school sites. So I thank you for sharing your perspectives with us. And I'm completing my first year as a new board member, and I just want to thank everyone for helping me climb this very steep learning curve. It's been a wonderful experience, and I appreciate my colleagues here, and I appreciate all of the Santa Cruz City School staff that have really helped me kind of get up to speed. It's been an experience, and I look forward to the next 3 years. Thank you.
We had our wellness meeting and started making plans for CalFresh kickoff. It's going to be March 17th. I attended the PCS dedication and toured their beautiful new building. Enjoyed the celebration for O&P, and again, just want to thank our hardworking chairs. The budget study session, really informative. I think it was the best yet and clarified a lot of things. I think it was a very nice opportunity for us to have a dialogue and talk about our budget. Delta board meeting was last night, and they reported that they received their six-year WASP accreditation, so that's pretty exciting. And that's why I was late to the BAC, but I'm glad I got there in time for the last of it, and the questions were great, so I'm thankful for that, and thank you, Jim. We move on to the approval of the minutes of the regular meeting on November 18th. Is there a motion?
Move approval.
Patty, a second?
I have a change just in the student part. It's on page 8 of the board book.
Okay.
It says that our auditions for the musical were after the winter break. I can assure you they already happened after the Thanksgiving break.
Oh, I'm sorry. Thank you.
Thank you for that clarification.
Move approval with the change.
All right. And a second?
Second.
Okay. Any questions or other comments? All in favor? Oh, student representation. Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstain?
Abstain.
Okay. And the minutes for the regular meeting study session on December 2nd.
Move approval.
Allison second. Moves approval.
Second.
And Sheila seconds. Any discussion or questions about this? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Abstain?
Abstain.
Consent agenda is next, and are there any items that the board, that board members would like removed for discussion? Is there a motion?
Move approval.
Allison moves approval.
A second.
Any questions or comments? This is a roll call and student.
Aye.
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 Aye. Aye.
So reports taken in closed session. The Board of Trustees took action on certificated, classified, and management leaves, retirements, resignations, and appointments. Joseph Troutwin was appointed as Interim Director of Academic Equity and Categorical Programs. The Board of Trustees heard information on expulsions 4/15/16 and 5/15/16. And the Board of Trustees heard an update and provided Assistant Superintendent Molly Parks with direction regarding SCCCE negotiations for the 2014-15 year and the 2015-16 year.
Thank you. We have the vote on expulsion 4/15/16. Do you have a motion?
I so move. I better not so move because...
Okay.
So I'll call for the motion to approve the recommendation to expel.
Second.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Abstain?
And I'm sorry, I didn't clarify that that was for 4/15/16.
4/15/16.
Right. I'm sorry, may I clarify? Was the second, Ms. Torres?
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay, the second expulsion is 5/15/16.
Okay. I move to adopt the recommended decision to expel student 5/15/16.
Mm-hmm.
I had to get it right.
And suspend the expulsion.
Sorry.
Okay. Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Opposed.
Abstain. Okay, we have a staff report on secondary coordinator.
As the entire backlog comes up to the front, I want to start by thanking Trustee Shabuk for helping us out by introducing our amazing secondary response to intervention coordinators. I want to start by saying we have in Santa Cruz City Schools an incredibly talented and committed teaching force. They are a force, and these five individuals step forward at the beginning of summer. Individually, and now they are a team, and they are the individuals who are working closely with their school sites to create a safety net for our most vulnerable students. And we saw a glimmer of this back in June and July, and we definitely see it now. So even though they're here tonight really just to provide an introduction to these response to intervention programs at our schools, what you're going to hear is the passion they bring to their work. And this is really challenging work. This is the work of social justice. This is the work that, as teachers, we all want to do every day, but in fact, with the number of students, with the number of standards, with all of that coming at us, we need systems. We need that support, and who better to support those systems than our own teachers? So I'm sorry for the lengthy introduction, but you inspire that in us all. And I'm going to hand it over to Jennifer Wildman, who has done an amazing job of working with this team.
I'm not sure you left anything to say. I'm really excited to bring you the secondary RTI coordinators. I always love working with all of our RTI coordinators, but this has been a really hard, challenging, and wonderful start to our secondary RTI program, and it's because of these people behind me that you're going to hear from in a minute that this can happen. And if you want a group of people who believe that all kids can learn and succeed, this is your group. Every time we work together and make plans and talk, it's always positive and forward-thinking. They all work with their principals, they're supervised by their principals, and they work at their school sites. I find myself kind of in the role of the coach, I think, for them, and just a support when they need it, and I feel really lucky to get to work with them. So all five of them are going to speak to you, and then we'll have lots of time for questions. Thank you.
My name is Kathleen Kennedy. I teach at Santa Cruz High. I'm the Response Intervention Coordinator this year at Santa Cruz High after teaching there for 28 years. And these are my colleagues. Amy Spires, I didn't know this at her, from Francis Gordon Middle School. Lindsay Caruso from Mission Hill. Steve McDowell from Soquel, and Michael Lynch from Harbor High. And we are here tonight to share some of the really exciting work that we've been doing and some of the struggles we came across, and hopefully share our goals for the future.
Next slide. So we really wanted to share our guiding principles, the tenets that ground the work that we're doing this year and into the future. And really the most important is the one that's there first. And all students within our school systems have the ability to grow and the desire to learn. And so with that in mind, we'll skip down to the last one, that really we need to develop systems to enable this to be a reality in our school systems. So the bullet points in between kind of illuminate some of the other principles that drive our work. Effective teacher teams are at the center of our work, that assessments and accurate data can help us guide instruction, and that teachers need support in doing this really, really difficult work.
We have a vision, our goals are 3 to 5 years, that we have a system that's transferable, that we're building right now, that we would like to have it extend to other teachers on staff and have it be just as effective as what we find that we're building presently. We want to build systems that monitor growth and fidelity of the program itself. Presently we have a tool called SMI, Scholastic Math Inventory, that we're using and implementing 3 to 6 times a year to monitor kids' ability, what their weaknesses are, and also what their growth is. And we are also using that to, at this point, hand select kids that show deficiencies in their math skills, and coordinating that with the pacing guides that teachers are using in their math classes or science. I suppose it will extend to that sometime in the future. And drawing those kids into a program where we can provide them with a self-paced, differentiated, targeted support that has the flexibility where kids in need can enter a program and can exit the program when they reach mastery prior to going into their classroom, the regular classroom, for the instruction on the topics that we are seeing that they have deficiencies. We really do want to provide kids with the fortitude of knowing that they can be successful in class. And we just think building the model we think is going to be very successful for them. In terms of instructional goals, we want to see well-defined conventions and instructional practices among our teachers. One of those is going to take the form of another tool that we have presently, and that's called Illuminate, which is a test bank that can generate short quizzes, if you will, that we can use in the classroom to in the form of exit tests, where teachers and students alike can identify how effective the teacher has been and monitor their own progress, so that the teacher and the students as a group can look at their ability, where they stand on a particular lesson, and judge whether to go forward or go backwards. So those are some of the things that we're working on that we see pushing into the future. They are in their infancy, but we see that they're substantive enough that they, I think, will push forward into our future plan.
There's a video on my slide, so you can watch that. But in our goals for the next few years, I wanted to share with you the work we're doing this year as we research and develop our RTI models. In this short video, you see an intervention that's currently happening at one of our sites. The first group you saw was a group of six students working closely with a math teacher on current course topics. And then you also see a group of 11 students who are working on a personalized instructional program on a computer that meets their individual math needs. The students rotate through these different groups throughout the week. So they're either always working on the math program on the computer or working with the teacher on the current course topics. In order to meet the needs of our students and to have interventions in place such as this, here's a few things that we are working on this year. First, we are working to strengthen our core instruction in both math and science. We're collecting multiple sources of student data, including SMI, SRI. We're also looking at attendance data, ELB status, and RSP students. We're developing instructional success teams at each site. On these teams, we have administrators, teachers, and counselors, and together we're analyzing the data to make recommendations of placements for student needs. Lastly, we're communicating our roles as RTI coordinators and our vision for the RTI models at each site.
And nothing's free or easy, so there are some challenges to implementing our vision, as you can imagine. I think I speak for all of us when we say that we have felt really, I'll preface the challenges by saying we felt content, successful in our efforts so far. So I don't want to give the impression that we feel like we're up against insurmountable roadblocks, but we do feel it's important to talk about some of our challenges that we have coming into this at our respective schools. One, of course, is the bell schedules, trying to figure out how in our day to implement intervention time and serve all the students who need the support in math and other subject areas. As you know from the RTI model of the Walk to Read at the elementaries, it's all hands on deck, really carving out a certain time of the day and using a lot of people, which is another part of our challenge, is finding not only that time, but also qualified people to help us make small groups and serve as many students as we really have need. Also technology. We are pretty rich in our district. We are lucky to be a district that has given a lot of focus on adding technology over the years, but it's still a challenge, again, when we want to expand and provide as much opportunity for our students to have some dedicated technology at our schools related to the intervention programs would be hugely beneficial going forward. Also, grading policies, we find that you know, when we add those points into our looking at our data, we don't always know if somebody's F is another teacher's F. And we want to be as thoughtful about the students that we're placing in intervention as we can be. So we're definitely would like to cite at our sites in our district, really be able to have some integrity related to grading so that we can use those data points with fidelity and know that we are making the right decisions about the students that we place in the intervention. And lastly, we find coming up from the elementaries into middle school and middle schools going into high school that a lack of commonality in curriculum can definitely affect the students' experience. We are lucky that Mission Hill and MB40 do share a common curriculum. So as much as we feed into our high schools, the students are getting a pretty common experience. However, the feeder schools are coming, the students are coming with different skill sets, and the elementary schools have some disparate curriculums, so that can also lead to challenges coming into the upper grades. But all in all, again, we are, I think, pretty satisfied with our start this year and are really looking forward to, even with challenges, the year ahead with our schools.
Okay, so we did make a little bit of a packet because we realized as we made this PowerPoint, you really aren't getting a picture of exactly what these guys are doing. You got a great big picture, and the video, I hope, helped a lot. But in developing secondary RTI, one of the things that we noticed is that it looks really different than elementary RTI. So we've done a lot of research about secondary RTI programs. We've read books, we've met, we've talked, we've looked at a lot of different models. And in doing that, we realized we have to make impact in two places. One is in the core program. So in the core math program and the core science program at Harvard, we're really trying to look at what happens in that class already for students and where is there room for differentiation and where is there room for us to improve the way that we teach kids in math. The first document is made by Mike. Mike, can you want to explain what this is? Are you okay with that? It's so cute. It's so cute. I want you to know what it is. It's beautiful.
Sure. In an attempt to integrate what we're learning from our consultant Paul Bloomberg this year, I consolidated what I took away from his presentation to us so that I could share it with our staff at Harvard High, which I see as part of this response to intervention role. Having the time to think through these wonderful professional development opportunities we have and synthesize that information for my peers, and especially for my science team. So this is a goofy roadmap here. The analogy I made for what I was trying, or for what Paul was trying to communicate is really student ownership is at the heart of learning. Ownership, period, is at the heart of learning for anyone, especially for students. So feeding onto student ownership boulevard, data cycle circle, and teacher clarity avenue, and student self-assessment, and the different things that will get you from that road onto student ownership or what.
We called it an infographic because it's beautiful. And it does kind of illustrate what we're going for in instruction in the core program. On the second and third pages three and four, are the Harvard High School study team rubric that they're using in their science classes to help students understand their impact on their groups that they're working with. The next page, five, is Brant Supporting Middle School. This is just an example of the kinds of data that we're collecting. We took out the student names, it's just numbered on the side. This is in, can explain more if you have questions, but this is just an example of the ways that we collect data in order to see how kids are doing in their math classes. We have several math measures. We also find out whether a student is an English learner. Do they have an intervention already somewhere? IXL is an intervention program, or a computer program that a lot of our students in special ed use. So that's across the top. There's also some scores and some grades. So we're just looking at trying to gather as much data as we can before we place anyone into an intervention. The next item in the packet is on page 73. Yeah, I need a banner. Okay. Thank you. All right, here we go. The next page is page 8. The next item is from Steve's intervention course. And Steve has a before-school intervention at 7:30 in the morning. It is by invitation, but once you're invited and you accept, it's mandatory. And he's gone the extra mile to get kids math, elective math credit for it. So for every 15 hours they spent, they get some credit. And he's got kids that would like to be in his intervention class all day long. If you'd like to go see that, it's pretty exciting. We're also hiring math tutors. We have some funding that was set aside for math tutors. We're working on that. It's a little tricky. We have to be careful. We have work study, which we can use, and we also can do some limited term assignments for that. We're working through HR and also through our valid tutor contract for that. On page 10 is Mission Hill's an example of a report from results. And I know you always like results. We're getting very preliminary results for the very first time right now, and it's really exciting. This is a group of 16 students who were participating in the math intervention over the last, how long?
8 weeks.
About 8 weeks? Nine. So, Rolla, I'm answering for you, Lindsay.
So, it's been, for this group, it's been 9 weeks.
So, this is a 9-week intervention group, and from the time that this group took the SMI in the fall until the time they just retook it, they made an average growth of almost 178 points. The rest of the seventh graders who didn't get this intervention made a growth of 107 points. So everybody made great growth, but the intervention students made 70 more points, which tells us that they made some accelerated growth. Now, what exactly that means, we sat and tried to discuss this morning. It's hard to figure right now. We're just learning about the SMI, but it is a nice, positive piece of data, so we wanted to bring that. And then finally, at Santa Cruz High on page 11 and 12 is a similar report. Kathleen approached it a little bit different at Santa Cruz High School. She was working closely with one teacher who was teaching intro to algebra in two different periods. Not only did they give the SMI, but they were able to use all the instructional materials that came with it to target the skills that the kids were lacking in the first SMI test that they took. So the teacher worked on those lessons in her class to address those needs. And the kids who were really behind, who she was mostly worried about, got some pull-out intervention support. And those kids also made really great gains. So we're seeing some preliminary positive data and really trying to look at all of our successes, which there are quite a few. But we know we have a long road ahead of us. So we'd love to answer your questions if you have any. And just keep in mind, we're just starting, and I don't know might be the answer to some of them. So here we go.
Hey, Jeremy, and then Allison.
Thank you. I've got a bunch of questions. I'll just ask two. Grading policies need to be aligned. Amy, I'm addressing this to you. I know that when English teachers want to align grading policies, they'll score essays together, and they'll sit down and spend a day grading essays. So I'm wondering what practical things can be done in math so that grading policies can be aligned. And the second one is lack of commonality among curriculums. And is this going to be solved, do you think, when we adopt math curriculum this year, hopefully, at some point? And those are my first two. Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, so the grading policies in math, like you said, language arts teachers will get together and create anchor papers to, base their grading off of. In math, different teachers can have different policies on homework, which can affect grades. They can have different policies on retaking tests, which can affect grades. They can have different weight given to quizzes versus tests versus participation. And so that can really affect the first blush of what a student's score is. And so there are ways to sort of drill down into that, but that takes time when we have to look at each student's grade and each student's disaggregated information for the grade that they got. So it would help if there, at least at school sites, if there can be some agreements for our work, that we know that teachers, that a D is a D is a D, based on how the percent of importance given to different things that teachers are asking of them. The second question, curriculum. That's a great question. as I said, Lindsay and I, the middle schools, we share a common curriculum. The adoptions are happening in all the secondary?
In January.
You might be able to speak to that better about what the state of that is, because I'm not really aware of what's going on.
So we are about to embark on the textbook adoption process, which will be piloting two programs starting in January. And at the high school level, because our middle schools already have CPM, they're going. And also one of our high schools, Harbor High School, uses CPM. So we had to kind of make some decisions about how to do this pilot because the other two schools have different programs. And so we're going to pilot Integrated Math 1 at the high school level to try out two different programs. One is Pearson, which is not a program we currently use, and the other is CPM, which we'd like everybody to try. It's tricky because, like I said, we have one school using CPM, but they don't use the integrated version. So it's still going to be a pilot for them because they'll be getting to see the other materials that they don't currently use. To get one consistent program is going to be a challenge, I think, because each program has its strengths. And teachers all have their own experience and their own perspective. So we're going to be working on a process that allows us to look at the state criteria for math programs. There are a lot of toolkits out there that help us look at each piece of the program and evaluate each piece separately, and then to give feedback on the whole programs. But I believe the final adoption actually rests in your hands. So we'll be working really hard to give as much feedback as we can so that you know how teachers felt about both of those programs. And at the same time, will be enough information for you to help us make that decision.
Can I say one more thing?
Yeah.
And I think one thing that would really strengthen the alignment is to get proper training for all teachers for whatever curriculum that is adopted. I went through the CPM training, and I'm in my third year using the CPM curriculum, but when you're adopting a new curriculum, training is just so important if you want teachers to be on the same page. Because if we all looked at that curriculum separately, we would all take different ideas from that.
Can I just quickly add to this, that the sequencing is just as Jennifer said, but we're going to bring you that recommendation, so you'll be either approving or not approving the recommendation. So we're going to do a lot of that work. And then the other piece of the adoption is that it is part of our budget development process to not only look at the purchase of the books, but we know that the books will just sit on shelves unless we provide that ongoing support. And it really goes beyond 1 year. We know that what's been successful for middle school and for Harbor with CPN is to have that ongoing partnership, so that second, third year, you still have that consultant who's available.
Yeah, absolutely. We've got really good support from our consultants for both programs. I wanted to mention also that all of the new programs that we'll be purchasing from here on out will also be technology-based, which is obviously going to also present some challenges for us while we learn how to do that and make sure we have the right technology. The current adoptions are called hybrid models, so they have a textbook and teacher materials that you can hold in your hand, and also some materials that are online. So we're going to be learning a lot.
Thank you very much. It was great to hear the presentation, and I appreciate the work you guys are doing. I know it's really hard in the beginning of when there's no roadmap, and so it takes a lot of bravery, and I'm sure your work, it's a whole different ballgame, so thank you. I have a question about the structure. I'd like to kind of have a better sense of how you spend your day. I've been imagining more of a systems coordinator, but what I was hearing sounded more like a case manager of students. So can you help me get a better picture of what happens during the day?
I hope so. So we're learning what that looks like and kind of norming also what that looks like. And so I'm going to let them answer because I think it's slightly different everywhere. But I want to say part of that is them figuring out what works at their school site and what fits into the model that we're looking at. So it does look slightly different, I think, for each person, but in general, I think you're going to hear some trends.
And I'm going to pop in a clarification to my question, too, is are you working primarily with teachers or are you working primarily with students?
Mostly with teachers
okay.
and principals.
Okay.
There are RTI coordinators working with students, but we're working with students, I think, as it serves for developing the model,
okay.
if that makes
Great.
Sense.
Totally.
Here we go.
So let me give you some details about how I start my day with my with the model that I'm building. It's essentially has four stations. I invited 54 kids to this intervention. 18 of them took me, that were appropriate to that level. 18 of them took me up on it. There's four stations that they come into and that are direct instruction in small groups. From there, they move to the second station, which is computer interaction and individual rehearsal of the concept. From there, they go to a new idea that I've never used before called peer assessment, where kids actually become skilled at identifying what makes a successful problem a successful problem, and they critique each other's work, and thereby, my belief is that they internalize the process and what makes a good problem, and therefore become mini teachers in the process. And the fourth station is an exit test. If they don't pass that test, they will cycle back through again on the same level. And I have five different levels of sophistication in the topic that I'm working on presently. So, following the class, I have two new instructional technicians that I'm working with that happen to be former students of mine. And we are fine-tuning the process. And so that is taking about 45 minutes after class to say, okay, well, what happens if a person doesn't want to move on from the instruction? They feel like they need instruction. So the instructional stations are about 20, 25 minutes. So my instructional technician says, they can just stay there. So we're refining things and learning what the challenges are going to be for the classroom teachers when we move that to the classroom. The second part of your question was, are we working with kids or are we working with teachers? And I find myself doing both. I am teaching how to use Illuminate teachers so that they can get data-informed instruction. They can give quick tests either at the beginning of the class to identify who has the skills that are prerequisite to the lesson that's going to be taught, or post application, which is how well did we do, not just me as a teacher, not just you as a student, but how well did we do in trying to foster a culture where we are working with one another as a team. The rest of my day, a lot of times, looks at data. I coordinate with people outside the district. We're working with a placement test for incoming eighth graders because Soquel really has a challenge with two-year schools that have different philosophies, and we have no control over it because they're out of district.
That's very helpful.
I also want to speak just to the systems piece. So, for example, at Mission Hill Middle School, last year we voted to change our bell schedule, so there was time in the day, 25 minutes every day, where kids could get intervention. So that's a little bit of a systems piece that we worked with. Also, we have a team at Mission Hill where we're not just looking at SMI, their math scores, but we're also looking at all the interventions we have. So we have Read 180, we have some socio-emotional interventions, we have AVID, which isn't an intervention, but it's a support class that can be used to help students. So we're looking at what students have supports, are they in the best support system, what students are missing those supports, and where can they be placed. So that's the systems piece that we're looking at school-wide.
Thank you.
So, in summary, we do all the things you said. We test students, we kind of have a little case management, we do some teaching, and we disseminate curriculum to teachers.
I was just going to say,
yes, what she said, we're all working on some level of system data review and working with students when necessary, and trying to figure out how to make it work that it's the best system that can follow through. And I think one important key to that is going to be our work with Eddie Fergus, who I think was mentioned that we met with this week, and having him really help us refine, because right now we feel like we have to be all things to all people, you know, and we want to be that. And again, there's a lot of need. So I think working as a cohort with Jennifer at the helm and with Eddie Fergus and with our great staff, that we're really going to find our place and hopefully land our ships that can keep flying.
Thank you. We have roads, we have and with the help of their principals and assistant principals too. We've got great collaboration with all of their teams. So
Sheila and then Ella and Katie.
Okay, so I like Jeremy have a bunch of questions too, so I'm gonna start with one. And first I wanna say, you know, more power to you. This has been so needed for so long. And it's a very hard job, and I never could imagine how it was going to be done. I know Jennifer well enough now to know that the thing is, she'll learn from it and come back, and learn from it and come back, and I guess you guys all sound like you're doing the same thing. So I'm going to ask a question that's like a yeah, but question, but no, it's going to sound like a yeah, but question, but it's not that I actually think that you have this answer, but I want to hear if you've seen it or and thought of an answer, which is, my hair stood a little on fire when we talked about, well, they can go back and be re-instructed again. I'm like, you know, okay, so they're not doing well, so we're going to go and do the same thing to them again. So, and I know enough about the brain and about where kids fail in math to know that everybody learns math best in a different way, so that sometimes you adopt a way to do it and you can go, have them take it 17 times or have them come back to it and they're not going to get it because that's not the way they learn. And so I'm wondering in your system when you're like, do you want to go back and instruct again? And they say yes, but they go back and instruct again and they're not any better that time. Do you yet have that experience, and do you have a way to say, let's see if we can try a different approach to the learning? That's my question.
That is a great question, and anybody that wants to answer can. But really quickly, I think the thing that you may not have mentioned is one of the things we're doing is looking at instructional strategies that are effective according to research. And Steve's program is based on pre-teaching, so the kids are actually getting the concepts before they go back into the class. And as anybody who might admit to having a little bit of math phobia, I think some of the reason that some of our students don't do so well in math is because they're a little afraid. Their motivation is a little off because they don't feel successful. These kids know what they're going to learn before they get into class, and they can participate more readily. Even if they don't have it perfect, they've had exposure to the concept in a way that's kind of comprehensible with a small group, where they can speak up and someone can give them feedback, and even the student across from them gave them feedback, and then they go into the class and they get the instruction according to the program and with the teacher they're working with. So it's a little bit of a different kind of approach that we don't always get a chance to do, because in our own classrooms, we can't pre-teach before we teach. It's hard.
Yeah, and I think it's a great approach, but I guess my question is, and if that doesn't work, then what?
We cycle them back through and do something
the
different.
Same thing. Oh, okay. That's what I want to understand.
Yeah, we have a lot of resources.
Can maybe I hear from you about the difference, like how you go about doing that if they don't make it the first time?
I can't speak about math, but I can speak about the RTI framework, and the response to intervention assumes that a student who would be placed into an intervention would need something different, wouldn't need the same thing a second time. So really, when we're developing these systems for intervention, that is at the forefront of our minds. And in the video that you saw, lots of different modes of learning a similar thing, getting different experiences different ways. So absolutely, that's on the mind.
I just wanted to add to that a lot of what I've been doing is researching curriculum and finding curriculum for my teachers, because I think that's one of the things teachers don't have time to do. So I look at the level their kids are at and find the curriculum to pre-teach them. And some of it's with pairs, some of it with their groups, some of it's doing things, some of it's singing things, whatever, you know, different ways to give them this, the prerequisite skills they're going to need to do that. And I've done some of it in the classroom, and then I have a pullout as well. We do that.
Ella?
Yeah, you were discussing the issues and challenges around like pacing in classrooms. And I know because Santa Cruz has the Excel schedule, we kind of have inevitably a huge increase in pacing. We're going through what other classes go through in 2 days and 1 day. And I wanted to know if there was like an impact you saw there with how that affects you.
Well, this year I'm working just with Algebra 1, and as you know, our Algebra 1 or may not, our Algebra 1 is split into two classes. So we have Algebra 1 year long, 90 minutes, which is actually more hours than the average Algebra 1 class. So I'm a teacher and been teaching there, and so I know the impact of time, and it's always an issue. And it, unfortunately, it's not one of the issues that I'm going to be fixing this year, maybe next year. But that's definitely.
So it is like a negative impact?
Or? Well, it's really great for the high kids, and it's really hard for the low kids. It, the kids that are struggling already, they struggle more, but they get to have it a second time, but we're giving it to them the second time in the same way because we're teaching the same class to them again if they don't fail, if they fail. Wouldn't it be better to give it year long? I've been saying for 15 years.
And we're looking at different ways. So we're trying to see, and trying to make it predictive. So another year we can say, we think these are the kids going from 8th to 9th grade that are going to need this kind of support. And we can plan ahead for it rather than waiting till somebody goes through algebra really fast and doesn't make it. Instead of waiting, we're going to try and get them earlier, either before they get into the class or while they're in the class. And the pacing is definitely, it definitely has an effect. And I think it's positive or negative, just depending on the student.
Yeah. And a lot of the kids that we're targeting right now are the kids that would be struggling, and hopefully they won't. So the goal would hopefully be that they will then know how to advocate for themselves, you know, do all those things that the kids that aren't struggling are doing.
I have a question about the tutoring that is going to be offered, mm-hmm. is not yet being offered. I have two questions. One is tutoring going to be offered for all levels from Algebra 1 up to AP Calculus, for example? Mm-hmm. And the second one is, are the tutors trained around the curriculum being used at the school site? So for example, at Harbor, are they given some exposure to CPM and how that's different than the curriculum offered at other schools, or do they just kind of do their thing?
Or maybe they don't just do their thing. But they do need training, and that's definitely something that we've been talking about. Initially, I know for Abbott, initially hiring tutors, it's kind of like, I don't know, it's kind of like a family Christmas dinner or something. Thanksgiving dinner, we're like, ooh, where is everyone going to sit? We're not sure. And so we do have tutors, and we have funding for tutors, and there are lots of them in place at our high schools only. Right now, they're working with the RTI coordinator and whatever the RTI coordinator is doing. It doesn't mean it has to last that way throughout the year, but that's how we're starting, just to get the ball rolling. Does somebody that has a tutor want to?
So there is a lot of training that goes into the tutors. They have to know the conventions that you're using, the philosophy that you have, the attitudes, the mentality about that every kid can learn, the stick-to-itiveness that you need in the face of initial failure as a tutor or as a pupil that they're trying to tutor. There's a lot of attitudes that need to be coached. I have the good fortune of having two former students of mine that came through my program, know my philosophy, know my teaching style, and one of them has been with me for the last 2 years as I've been cultivating the idea of tutors, student tutors. She's been a tutor for me for 2 years prior to this, and she's amazing. She knows what to do. I think she's going to be a teacher. I'm not sure she knows it yet. She's going to be a teacher. But the discussions, if you could see the discussions that we're having post-instruction, you would be absolutely thrilled by what these people are doing as young college students with kids that traditionally have had trouble with math. I mean, it's really amazing what's going on in there. And when kids are learning self-advocacy, we had a conversation about, we have quiet kids in the classroom that are there, but they don't know to speak up. So we know that we need to teach self-advocacy. So there's a whole host of things that need to be taught. There's a lot of skill that we need to get the training. And that's just, I mean, for CPM, it's going to be a whole other training sequence.
This might be an, I don't know.
And the levels of the tutoring?
Right now, it's just that it's algebra one, or intro to algebra at this point, because they have to work within the interventions that we have. I think that's not the model that we envision forever, but it is the way we have to get started.
I think you have homework club.
Oh, how many
of you? Santa Cruz High, we do have a homework club that is, we have credentialed teachers that teach up through calculus. So you can get homework help at Santa Cruz High in the library after school with a credentialed teacher for all levels.
Okay, Patty, you're next.
Thank you. Mr. McDowell, I'm going to just, because we know each other, I've seen your style and I appreciate it, and I know that my student very much appreciated you. So when I look to your application here, you said that you had 54 students that you reached out to and 18 agreed. Can you tell me, one question would be to help me understand, first, what is the average math class size at City Schools for our upper divisions, grades 9, 10, 11, and 12? Second, in the pre-teaching that you offer, you have, I believe, one-third of the students you reached who said that they'd commit to it. How many have stayed from beginning to end? Because that's 7:35 classes early, and it is the only five-day-a-week class. No, maybe there's one more, one or two more that you offer. And then what happens to the other two-thirds that opted not to? You know, obviously you see that they need intervention. Where does the reach come? I know it's all new. I like the model. I like the everyday tutoring and giving them empowerment and reaching that way. But as we look to have some sort of alignment in order to make this work, as a board member, I want to hear where, how big the scope is.
First of all, you're testing my memory by giving me a 3-in-1 question.
Okay, so the first is, what happens to the other two-thirds
of
the students?
Well, first of all, as I'm sure you've understood, these are my crash dummies, and I have a crash dummy right along in that same car, where we are learning with one another, and believe me, everybody in the room is learning a great deal. I needed a model where those kids... We've chosen kids that have been targeted based upon the SMI scores and coordinated with the quantile interpretation of where those kids' ability is to extend the invitation. They show that these scores show that they have an aptitude for the skill that we're going to teach, pre-teach, and they have a certain readiness but have deficiencies. So that's something that's a skill in and of itself that we are stumbling through and trying to figure out how we can get better at that. So the other two-thirds may not be appropriate for them at this time. That's maybe the part one. I think the other part of the question you asked was class size. So class size, I think the Algebra 1 classes are around 25, 28. The goal was 25.
Only in the RTI or across the board?
No, it's across the board. But we do have classes, introductory algebra, that are in the 30s, so maybe 33, 35.
And the upper divisions? Do we have enough to have two classes in calculus?
That hasn't been something that I've put a lot of attention on. I do know that I think the cutoff is 32, although there's a lot of red that indicates, on the kids, there's a lot of red that indicates that we've gone beyond what our desired number is. There was a third one.
I just asked.
I just wanted to share something with
you told me that I think it's part of this, is that Steve's hope is that the kids that are in there will be successful and pass the word, and then the other two-thirds will be more likely to show up.
Yeah.
Oh, it really worked for me. Oh, it was really fantastic. My grade is up. I'm doing so great. And then that more and more kids will be able to, would be welcome, or would be motivated to help.
Encouraged. We're really trying to build a culture where it's,
we're
getting in front of a problem before it exists, that it doesn't seem punitive, it seems positive, and let's go do this, let's self-advocate, you're doing well, you're learning skills, you're succeeding, maybe I'll do that. When do I get my invitation? So that's what we're trying to build this year, so it's not punitive, it's a positive thing where kids will go into a program. There was something else that you
the
said.
The third piece was they asked, you started with 18, do you still have 18?
Actually, I thought initially that I could manage 10, and just to put the odds in my favor, and another kept signing up, and another kept signing up, so I admitted 14. And after, today was our seventh day of the intervention. So I guess all 14 are still with me. Actually, one dropped out of SoCal High School before they even got into the program. I have another four that are waiting in the wings. And we decided as a group with my TIs today that we were going to extend the challenge that a teacher will have in the classroom where they are stretched beyond what would be the ideal situation. So we're bringing in another four kids next week to manage. So we'll have 17 attenders. We have got 13 attenders from the beginning. They're still there. We're going to bring in four more next week. Okay. Everybody likes it, too.
I do want to comment that it gives a pause to try and think globally in the district about alignment in our schedules and some of the challenges that are brought by the benefits. We always hear the challenges and what we might need to do and look at as a board in the future to do what's best for children. So thank you.
And I just want to back up to you to say that his numbers aren't unique. That's happening at every single site. There is a huge need, and at this point we can't meet that need because of things like bell schedule or the number of credentialed teachers that can teach those classes. So with my instructional success team, I'm trying to see what supports do we already have in place where we can bring attention to math within that support, such as AVID or in the RSP classroom or even in the ELD classroom around that. But it's very true that we can't meet all the students that need more help at any of our sites.
Thank you.
Okay, Jeremy, you're next.
Yeah, I'm going to think out loud here, and I want you to correct my misconceptions. So what I'm perceiving is that the middle schools seem quite aligned in terms of curriculum and, to some extent, your approach, the way you're negotiating with your teachers. And the three high schools, well, each is unique in its own unique way. And I'm wondering, without stepping on my own 2 feet or yours, whether the goal of alignment is something that you talk about, whether you feel there's a lot of pushback, whether you want to be patient and wait. But surely in the ideal world, there's such a thing, I guess, as best practice. And where are we at with this in terms of the high schools? And thanks for listening to me think out loud.
Okay. So I'm not going to directly answer your question.
Thank you.
Because you're asking you're asking a lot.
Yes, I am.
I'm going to talk about my site.
Okay.
My site is sort of we have five new people in the department. Actually, counting certain changes, we have a sixth person that has been involved in the mix. So, but one of my challenges that I've been waiting to take on for years, but been fully committed to my classroom and unable to do, is coalesce the department, get some conventions in terms of practice, in terms of grading. This year we got a grading agreement amongst teachers that set boundaries on what areas we are going to speak to, what we're going to include in our grade, and what the weights, appropriate weights should be. That's big. Because when we look at the SMI data and compare that to test grades, we didn't have continuity, which brings out that question, what's going on? You know, let's call the grade what it really is. So there's a huge cultural shift that's happening at my site where people are starting. So Jeremy, you were at Soquel. I've been at Soquel for a long time, and I've seen a model that worked fantastically. I have seen signs of those things. We're not having conversations because TLCs dictate that. We're having conversations because we want to. And I was in the room with another new teacher, and they asked me about, well, how do you teach this right here? And then another teacher walked in, a math teacher walked in, and started into the conversation, and we were sharing ideas, just impromptu. That is a huge cultural shift at my school. Along with that, and that's one piece, but along with that, we need to also have pacing guides and have those agreements and conventions so that we can have timely conversations that foster that. Those kind of conversations about best practices, how you're doing this, oh, I like the way you did that kind of thing. So I'm wanting to answer your question in terms of what's happening at Soquel, and there are big things that are turning slowly, but they are turning. I'll also make a plug for keeping our teachers, because when we have teachers cycling through a program, in and out of a program, it's really hard to build a program and build continuity. And that's one thing we've had in the past, that I experienced in the past, and I would like to restore that.
Thank you.
I hope that answers
it. It does. Thank you.
Yeah. Anybody else? Do you want to talk, Mike?
Sure. I can talk more about our group, and I guess our position as RTI coordinators. It was pretty illuminating last Friday talking with Eddie around a big table about what can we align and what can we standardize. And I think what you've been hearing a lot of tonight is experiments. What is going to work best for our students? What are the needs of our students, and how can we best address them? And this year, we felt like we've had the latitude to really explore what sorts of systems are most effective for our students. And I think when we're able to come to the table and say, this is a really great model, can this model be moved to a different site, that we'll start to see alignment with regards to interventions. On Friday, we talked about we need to understand what these assessments do, what they tell us, and how our teachers can best use them. That's part of what we're going to do, too. So if we can get alignment around our interventions and around the sorts of data and information that we're sharing with our teachers, we might see some organic movement towards alignment between the sites. But like Steve says, it's a multifaceted, very large thing that we've been talking about as long as I've been working in Santa Cruz City School.
Thank you. This information you brought to us is fascinating. You can see that we're all really intrigued and want to know more and more, but our time is really limited. We have a lot on our agenda. And are there further questions that you guys can maybe email Jennifer about?
I was already looking at the clock and saying, you know, I might just get murdered if I kept going. I will email you, Jennifer. I had some concerns about kids with executive functions and how they fit in, and also just what's the total for this number so that I know how far
right.
We've moved. But
no problem.
It's great. I really appreciate your presentation, and I have tons more questions that can, maybe I'll come visit.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Do a quick check with the public that are here. How many of you are here to speak to the board about first interim?
They are
first interim.
Raise your hands. How many of you are here to speak to the LCAP item?
Shall we switch?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I make a motion to switch.
I'll
make a motion to move item new business for the
9.3.3.
Yes, to before 9.3.2, so that we can go over that next.
Excellent.
In respect to
okay.
The people here.
And we'll give them a moment too. Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
opposed?
But that's the thing with people when they have to be answers.
So we need a strategy.
Yeah.
We need a strategy. We need a time parameter. We need something.
Or maybe we have to talk to Angela about
these are every time we do this. This is a study. That was a study session.
That
was a study session.
But on the other hand, we're adopting the whole thing.
Right. So then we need a study session. And then we need a study session. But that's what that was. And we can't have four study sessions and...
Are we breaking?
Looks like we are. We're waiting for Jim. If you say a break, everyone will leave.
No, I'm not saying it. I'm letting...
Where's Jim?
Is there water back there? Or did somebody say there wasn't?
Yeah, we've got cups.
No, there's water. There's just, it wasn't.
Right, that was moving item up 9.3.3, and that is our first interim report.
Jim, you're in the hot seat. We switched.
While you were away.
See? Don't leave the room. We want to respect it.
All right, good evening. Thank you, President Vestal, members of the board and the public, Superintendent Monroe. Bringing forth tonight begins the first step of our 2015-16 financial reporting, as well as initiating the stage for the 2016-17 budget preparation and ongoing changes for Santa Cruz City Schools. I want to begin by giving just a tremendous amount of thanks to the finance department that works directly with me on a daily basis, the Jereen Lacey, Suzanne Trincheros, and the rest of the team for putting in yeoman's work in the completion of this report. Again, we continue to do that in spite of switching over to a new financial system. Just to give you an idea, about a week before the report was due, we found out that the system automatically doubled every entry, so we had to reverse out 29 pages of general ledger entries. That took staff about 7 or 8 a couple of days, but we got it through. And they made a tremendous amount of adjustments in this preparation of this report. So it's just part of the process that we do as we go through and learning the new download of the system. But they just did a fantastic job in order for us to meet the timelines for tonight. So what are the required reporting periods, as you may be well aware? A short report is basically required throughout the fiscal year. We adopt the budget by July 1. Many times it's done during the last part of June of the previous fiscal year. We hold a hearing. And then we have the actual adoption piece, which goes hand in hand with the local control accountability plan. And those will be held at 2 separate meetings and must be adopted and presented to the County Office of Ed by July 1. We then begin the process, or continue the process, of closing the books, the unaudited actuals that then become due by September 15 of the previous fiscal year. While we're doing this, we're starting the new school year and trying to manage both pieces of 2 different fiscal years of the books at the same time in preparation for the students coming in and our employees returning to campus, especially in the classroom. What we're reporting today is the first interim, which has an as of date of October 31, which then goes to the County Office of Ed by December 15. Again, this is a snapshot of the first 4 months of the fiscal calendar year for the district. Again, we project out these expenses based upon the first 4 months out, including the next 8, to give us our fiscal year outlook. Our next reporting period will be the second interim as of January 31. That'll come to you by March 15. If the district then is qualified fiscally, which we don't foresee at all as part of this presentation, we'd have to do a third interim. In many cases, though, we as a district have continued to do this report just as a way to be tightening up the hatches to get ready for the end of the fiscal year. It goes hand in hand with the closing of the year. We're in the process of trying to create the next year's budget at the same time, and also to see exactly what amount of dollars will be carried forward to then assist in the next 3 years looking forward. So that process goes on simultaneously also. So it's a constant process. Really, as we begin, we look at 15, 16, we are really beginning that process of looking at the 16, 17 budget already. That information needs to be put together to provide hopefully sound recommendations. Again, the certifications, real briefly, as you know, positive certification says that we as a district will meet our financial obligations, not just for this year, for the outgoing 2 years. And that's critical because even though it's required of us by the state, municipalities, other public agencies are not required, which is why we must have our budget adopted by June 30, July 1, yet the state kind of sets their own parameters. And then we must show to be able to do it for 3 years out. Qualified means we may not meet. Usually it's that third year out, which occurred quite prevalently during the time of the economic crisis. Districts were trying to project what the dollars would be, and many times information continuously changed the last couple of weeks of June. Negative means you will not be able to meet. And this happened amongst many districts in the state during the height of the crisis. The challenge for this piece is that if you do fall in the negative, someone else steps in to take over local control for you as a school district. Our first interim of 2015-16, we're self-certifying as positive. And that basically says we're sending this report in, which will then be reviewed by the County Office of Ed as part of their oversight to validate the information that we send using the state software. Here's a key component that a lot of people will go to as far as the report. This will give you a history of our unrestricted reserves. And this has come into play quite openly in the last year and a half or so, based upon if the funding formulas from the state and all the parameters that go along with it kick in, that the state indicated that really a district should not have any more than double the minimum required percentage for a district their size. All those parameters haven't kicked in, so a district like Santa Cruz City Schools would say you have no more than 6% on your required reserves unless you had some set aside for specific reasoning, i.e. technology, i.e. capital outlay, i.e. a facility project, whatever will go along those terms to show to then have to be reviewed by the County Office of Ed. But you can see here for the last 8 to 10 years, it's averaged about 12.8% as the high, all the way down to 7.49, the low, which is about 13.14, which is pretty apropos as the height of the economic recession. And today, as of 10/31, and I will assure you that this figure will change. In our particular case, we know it's going to change for the positive based upon recent events. We're projecting 3.48. And again, you'll hear me use the term projections quite often and quite openly. Because again, we're giving you information based upon what we know today at the time of the report, and that most significantly will change between now and January 31, April 30th, and then June 30th. So what are some of the significant changes we saw for our revised budget versus first interim? And our last budget revision occurred with our unaudited actuals, which would have been added. We presented at 9:15 to the County Office of Ed, that's the day that comes in, which is when we updated a lot of our information as we transitioned the totals from 14-15 over. So what are some of our changes from the revised budget versus our first interim reporting date of 10/31? We saw our local control funding formula sources increase in the unrestricted revenues by about $273,000 as a district. Okay, this includes the RDA revenue from the county J-29, which incorporates a lot of our taxes, some that go specifically into the general fund and some that go into ancillary funds outside. It also affected, we were affected by our enrollment projections. We reduced them to align with what we were going to report with our CBEDS day, which is that first week in October. And as we showed in earlier reports to the board, we are a declining enrollment district. Not as large as it was during the financial downturn, but we're still declining just to a certain percentage. So we continue the discussion with our vendor partner to really see if we can get even closer to what we project for not just next year, but 2 or 3, 5 years down the road. State programs were affected. Up all till June 15, June 16, June 17, we were sold a budget $601 per ADA, per student, for one-time reimbursement from the state. Lo and behold, the last couple of weeks of the year, no, change that to 529. But we have an adopted budget that we present to you in June, that's with information really as of the end of May. As we get this information towards the latter part of the year, we're gonna see significant changes, and that will occur during this first reporting period for the new fiscal year. So we reduced $450,000 in state programs due to this reduction of the funding source from the state. On the positive side, though, the state in some ways gave that money back, but with more restrictions. They created the new Educator Effectiveness Grant, which we'll begin to receive in late November to the district, and a lot of that is earmarked and geared towards professional development on the certificated side. So Angela Meeker's group and ours will work closely together to develop a budget for that as the funds are received and roll out the necessary parameters. Again, that will tend to increase our bottom line at the end of this year, because we could spend those one-time monies, which equate to about $1,400 per certificated staff member over a three-year period. But it's restricted as to how that money can be expended. So that will automatically inflate some of our balances at the end of the year. What are some of our unrestricted expenditure changes? We have salary adjustments that have been projected to now capture actual costs of the first 4 months of the year and how we now project them to go out for the next eight. We also had a significant positive negotiation with the certificated side. Based upon that, there was an exchange of dollar for dollar with benefits going towards salary, in addition to a 3% increase of new dollars to their salary schedule. So those changes were shown during this first interim piece. So you'll see that large fluctuation also occur. In addition to open enrollment changes that occurred because of the way that health and welfare benefit plans were renegotiated between the sides, it created also dollars that would have a change on the benefit side in exchange for salary. And supplies and services were actually budgeted to meet this 1031 deadline. This one is significant because we learned at the end of last year when we said, you're gonna receive increased supplemental dollars, which are dollars that must be spent on our free and reduced population as well as our English language learners. The percentage increase we'll show you later, our gap funding increased from the mid-30s to about 51%. This created an onslaught of dollars, which we knew, but we couldn't actually come in time to budget by the end of the June adoption. So the holding place that we've done, and many districts do, is to put that in the 4,000s, which are supplies. And then as we've hired a lot of these new staff as teachers on special assignments, people into new roles, I think as RTI, replaced those in the classroom, we then made that switch of those dollars from the supply line now actually to the expenditure and salaries and benefits. So that'll give you a significant information to use when we show that $1.3 million difference in supplies. So when you see some of the changes in unrestricted revenue, this happens again, this is the difference from about 915, 916 to 1031. Our LCFF sources, this is the revenue piece, increased about $273,000. Our state programs, we show you the decrease based upon that loss in funding toward the latter part of 2014-15, as well as a small difference in our local programs of what we budget as far as that. And then, of course, the transfers in remain very, very similar.
Tim, can I just insert? Although those dollars were held in the supply line, you all approved what those expenditures would be via the LCAP approval, so we're able to make the program adjustment faster than we are able to have the accounting department make the shift in the budget, because the changes happen so quickly, but because we've done so much work through the LCAP process with the community, and we knew what were next priorities in terms of implementation of program, especially for those targeted supplemental dollars.
And then thank you, Superintendent Monroe. That's a perfect segue, because we began that process about the same time last year. As we kicked off this local control accountability plan, you know, last year we kicked off a very rudimentary survey. And in some ways, we wasn't able to be sent to every single family that was our intention. But we received a lot of input beginning this time of year that was sent out via Assistant Sue Meeker's group and through our IT department. This year was some of the changes that we made with IT, the recommendation of Mr. Gomez's group. We are now able to send out this survey electronically and gather more information. This is where we began to gather information last year about increasing certain intervention programs, increasing services to the English language learners that would cross over some different areas, increasing math intervention tools. How can we increase homework clubs after school? How can we increase supply budgets to all of our sites? This is what we heard loud and clear via our rudimentary survey last year that's in process right now. That was actually emailed or sent to our parents over the last week. We asked for input by December, last Friday the 4th, and we'll begin to compile that information to bring forward for the remainder as we continue this budget process for this year. Again, this will just give you a pie chart of where you see a lot of the sources for our unrestricted revenues. The reason why we focus, you know, highly, I know at this district and many districts on the unrestricted side, because these are the dollars that come to us that we really get to determine how we want and need to allocate it based upon our many priorities. And that's why you'll see a lot of influence on this piece, especially from the unrestricted side. We do get restricted dollars, not as much as there were in the past, but there are specific limits to how you can allocate those dollars and expenses. Again, this shows you some of the changes in the unrestricted expenditure side, which I covered in some of the previous slides. The salary changes have increased, again, due to that, a lot of it to that dollar-dollar exchange that we made in negotiation with certificate staff. We then begin to input also the changes via what Superintendent Monroe mentioned, the supplemental dollars into salary and benefits versus the supply, which you see a significant decline in the books and supplies by the 1.3. That was directly offset in many cases by certificated and benefit changes, including classified to some positions that were increased there. And then you see the services, which remain pretty static. You know, we have a pretty good idea on those. And then indirect support, that's just a line that's tagged along to how we as a district centrally operate a lot of these categorical programs and manage that process throughout the course of the year. So that gives you an idea. This on the unrestricted side, we have expenses of about $50 million. This is one thing I think some of us may lose sight of. What you're charged with as you're elected to this board is you're basically the board of directors for a $70 million operation on an annual budget, on an annual basis. That's what we're doing here at Santa Cruz City Schools. Again, this will break out the pie as far as unrestricted expenses. That break out the piece of it, breaking down the certificated classified benefits. Again, you'll see, based upon majority of school districts, you're operating at a pretty solid piece when you have about 85% of your salary and benefits based upon your revenues. In this case, it seems to appear to be higher because this is just incorporating the unrestricted side of the revenue house. Versus also the restricted side also incorporates some dollars. But the majority of our funding here would be on the unrestricted side. Again, this gives you just a basic layout of some of the changes in the unrestricted fund balance. We began the year, which we're just concluding our external audit, which we presented to you as a board in January. We ended up last year with unrestricted fund balance of $6.1 million. Deficit spending as far as we've been able to trim that down a little bit from our revised budget to our first interim. And this is where we're showing our ending unrestricted fund balance to be right now. Will this change? Absolutely. So my responsibility to the superintendent, to you, and to the stakeholders in the public is as these changes occur, what's created them, and then they report them. And how then can we use them to affect our students' progress? So, yes. The multi-year projections, again, this will tell you what are some of our assumptions that we use. Our property taxes, where we project a 1.5% to 2% increase based upon the elementary or secondary district. They came in last year approximately at 4% based upon the growth throughout the county. We won't receive the actual numbers until September, which is the following fiscal year. They'll be updated through our attendance reporting period as we get them from the county itself. So we use those also as projections. So as we get more information towards the latter part of the year, we will adjust this most definitely at second interim, as well as the RDA revenue that will come in, and then the gap funding rate. This is where we were actually caught a little bit off guard as a district all throughout the state. 15-16, the percentage came in at 51%. Up until about June 15, that gap funding rate was in the mid-30s. So that's what created a significant change to our supplemental dollars and our unrestricted dollars for the new fiscal year. And that's when we'll receive a lot of this information. We'll receive in January the governor's first look at the 2016-17 budget. Then we go back in May. Well, he will then tighten up based upon negotiation with both houses at the state legislature to see exactly how the dollars will be rolled out to schools. Our key expenditure assumptions, currently on an average basis, we expect health costs to increase by 8% on an annual basis. Again, as that gets changed, and we'll receive that usually around April or May of next year when we actually get the rates from our vendor, when we'll come back and adjust those. Is that high? That had been the running average, but based upon this year in 15-16, we found out in late April, early May, it was a 2% increase. It was pretty much an anomaly we felt as far as that projection. So as that changes, that will also have a positive effect on our budget towards the second half of the year. STRS rates, these are pretty given. The government basically said this is what your commitment is going to be for retirement programs for certificated and retirement programs for classified. Again, this will give you an idea for the multi-year projection. It'll show you at the bottom where our percentages that we are projecting as of October 31st. How current are these numbers? As of October 31st. We're now in December. So we've been making changes as we get more information throughout this process. You know, a significant effect happened to us on November 20th. That's when the election was certified, which is really going to enable us to really begin to open the doors to many programs and opportunities for our students here at Santa Cruz. Not just from the fact of maintaining career technical education programs that previously were funded by the County Office of Ed, but by also potentially reducing some costs that came from the general fund that can then be reallocated based upon our many needs of the district. So we're pretty excited. I mean, we really feel for the first time that we can do this, especially if we're prudent and dedicated and planning and how we want to do this. Because in many cases, this is the inception of one-time monies. So how do we then best use those one-time monies over a period of 3 to 4 years? Based upon the multiple sets of expenses. And this will just show you 16, 17, and 17, 18. Again, broken out as far as this. This PowerPoint actually has also been included on our website for those that may not want to take a paper copy, but we did that as part of our BAC meeting last night, and also goes hand in hand with the work study session that's also on the website from last week. So what's on the horizon? We know 16, 17 is still going to be a positive year for us as a district and the state. But what we're also hearing is the governor's going to continue to use the one-time money train as a way of passing it to districts. There'll be some money that comes over the long term of the program. We'll calculate those via this calculator, but the majority of these monies that continue to be shown during growth will come to us via one-time money from the governor. He's definitely trying to leave this as one of his legacies. We'll receive in January his first look at the 16-17 budget. We'll come back in March, the second interim, which will then have about 8 months of operations for us as a district, and then we'll go to the governor's May revise in May. Of course, all that time, we're not just, you know, taking our time and being very deliberate. We're making all the necessary changes we hear throughout the year as we hear coming down from the state, as well as other changes we can have staffing our programs. So tonight, we come to you as a staff to approve the 2015-16 interim report with a positive certification. We'll continue to make adjustments as needed by second interim. And of course, my little legacy to you is always trying to find some type of quote to leave you with. This one I found from, this is one of my daughter-in-law's heroes, Dr. Seuss. Step with care and great tact, and remember that life's a balancing act. And in actuality, you put down that any budget in schools happens to be a great balancing act amongst the many needs. I just found this pretty appropriate. Also, in addition to this report, I'll just go real quickly, if I could ask Molly to bring up the MYP and the other pieces of it. One of the hot topics that's come up to us as a district and we hear is, you know, how do we fund our facility, our needs? You know, we have tremendous needs throughout the district. One of the main things that we've done, we kicked off last year per the direction of the board, was a long-range facility master plan. And we're in that process. In fact, we're meeting as cabinet to begin to firm up the dates when we take the actual visits now from the architect firm out to our stakeholders, our public, and set those up in January. And so part of that piece is, well, where do we get the money for some of these pieces? So as we look at our other funds and multi-year projections, this is kind of small, but this will tell you our other funds outside of the general fund. Almost look at these as restricted dollars tied to these programs. And if you look at really at Fund 21, which is in the state side called our building fund, this is where we, as a district, have placed specifically our RDA redevelopment dollars over the years that can fund a myriad of entities. So when we ask where do we meet or get our dollars for any type of facility need, emergency expenditure, we use these monies to pay our current lease obligations. Our, we rebuilt the field at B40 Middle. Our refinance recently, instead of limiting our liquidity for the SoCal field and a current balloon payment of $900,000, we have about 3.7 projected in Fund 21. These are the monies that we set aside and we have in case of a facility emergency or to set up for our long-term plan as far as that. And then, of course, as part of this piece, we break down each fund individually, but I also want to get to one other slide here, which we also have as part of a handout, and that's the MIP. Again, it's smaller print, but this will tell you everything that I have in those two pages broken out all on one complete slide to show the revenues and expenses along the lines. So with that, I'll open it back to you, President Mestolo.
Okay. Questions? Allison?
So I'm going to try to summarize if I'm making sense of this in the proper way, and you can, and I'll embarrass myself if I'm not, and you can help me understand this. So it seems I'm looking at the differences between the revenue and the expenditure back on that slide.
It's going to be in a different PowerPoint.
So it seems like there's a like $340,000 that we didn't get in as much as we thought we were going to get in, but we spent less. So there's a surplus of around $340,000. Is that an accurate way to think about it?
Yeah, you're looking at probably year three, the unrestricted reserve. I believe that was the point you're looking at. And what that turns to is, again, we as a district have to show that we meet 3% of our unrestricted reserve to meet our expenses.
Mm-hmm.
So when you see that designated fund, it says designated, that's the actual 3% tied to our expenses. This amount that they put under undesignated is that amount above the 3%. So for example, a point, that makes it 0.48, and it just says undesignated because the minimum requirement as a district is 3%. Mm-hmm. So that basically, as you said, is part of our carryover from the end of that third fiscal year that we projected.
Right. And you're saying that's a healthy number?
In most cases, what the state and what the analysts say now is that to be healthy as a district, they recommend anywhere between a 15 and 17% reserve. The state minimum requirement is 3%. Okay, so it's healthy because, yes, we're positively certified. Because what comes hand in hand, the state of California uses fund balances in its accounting. It basically says we're going to give you, for example, keep it simple, $1 million in revenue this year. But we're going to give it to you sporadically throughout the year. So you use that fund balance to project your budget and allocate salaries accordingly or any of your expenses. What it's not tied to is cash basis. You still have to have the cash to meet those expenditures on a monthly basis, especially for payroll and everything else. So that's how a higher reserve also assists. So it's that fine balancing act you're trying to create.
Yep. So last night at the BAC meeting, you mentioned that with this $340,000, you picked the number of $20 per student for supplies, and you said, wouldn't it be exciting if we could actually do that? And my question to you is, does that number hold for you, $20 per student?
Now, what I would look at is, I wouldn't even touch this $348. This just happens to be the dollar amount that we're projecting in year three. What I am saying as far as the fact, because we know this is one of the critical components that we not heard just recently, but we heard last year through in the whole LCAP process, is that based upon recent changes we continue to see, we know now with the parcel tax that's passed. We're beginning to see some more information from the state with the recipients of the potential increased one-time monies, that I feel very comfortable, for example, if I had to make a recommendation to you as a board to increase that supply allotment per student in the district to $20 at each level. Yes. And that's just based upon the information we know right now. Because like I mentioned, that percent we're projecting for the end of this fiscal year, which is about 11.9, that will go up based upon some recent information. So yes, I would feel very comfortable in that piece.
I want to clarify, it's not increase it to $20 per student, it's increase it by $20 per student. Mm-hmm. So it would take it at each grade span.
By take it up by $20 per student.
Yeah. Currently, we had budgeted this year, the budget was $15 per student at the elementary level, $20 per student at the middle school level, and $30 per student at the high school level. So that would say going from $15 to $35 per student at the elementary level to $40 per student at the middle school level, $50 per student at the secondary level.
Well, since we're, as we've been in the budget, where we're setting priorities for the year, I'd like to move that we spend upwards of $20 per student across the district and consider additional funds for FAL students so that we can see some real-time relief from, you know, the heroic fundraising of parents this year, and it's one-time money, so I'd like to make that motion.
Deb, I couldn't quite hear your motion down here.
I move that we spend the upwards of $20. We can settle the number by per student and spend that money this year in this year's budget.
Okay. Does somebody second it?
I'll
second it.
Okay. Allison seconds.
So that was moved by Deb and seconded by Allison.
Just be clear, it's increasing by
$20. It's increasing by
$20.
So it's more than what we spent. $20 more than
$20 more per student.
Per student, right.
Per student,
yeah. Yeah, I think just the piece of it that's not anywhere as an action item, but I know we can receive the direction to make those adjustments in the budget, and that's absolutely something we could do as far as that. I would feel very comfortable making that change immediately. Not today.
Any discussion?
Yeah.
Any questions?
I just have a question. When you say this year, you mean effective immediately, so that when would these, so my question being, understanding that you're saying it in that manner, is when will the teachers see this, you know, within our accounting system, should we move forward on this?
What we would then do is we go out, probably tomorrow, I sit with my staff, we can begin to make some of the budget changes that we have. That's been requested and directed to us by the board. And then we roll that out to the site leadership team, and then they would then use their allocation measures per site to roll it out. So basically, we can make budget changes to the school sites really by end of day tomorrow. The actual process of the sites then rolling it out, again, we've got to give us some time to roll it out per class, set up the priorities, and we'll get something that's new for us as a district.
Any comments from the public?
Jeremy. Point of clarification. We have a motion to increase our budget by $140,000 a year, ongoing expense. Is that correct? 7,000 times 10.
There's a motion, basically, it's directing us to go and make a budget adjustment for tomorrow.
For $140,000 a year, beginning this year, ongoing expense. I haven't seen numbers from you in terms of what that would look like in 16, 17, or 17 and 18. It seems to me that the protocol of this school board, the prudent protocol of this school board, is to first see those projected numbers so that we can make a rational rather than an emotional decision on such matters. So I would not be in favor of supporting that until I see those numbers. For example, in 2017-18, you're projecting a 3.48% there it is, 3.48% minimum reserve. Well, if we are spending $140,000 times 3,
Let
me finish a minute. I would like to know what that percentage would be. So, no, I would not feel
that it's appropriate for me to vote for that until I can see that number. Now, if I'm missing the point, I'd love to hear about it.
Yeah, my recommendation was, I didn't see it clearly, was I wanted to take advantage of the $340,000 this year. So my recommendation was for one-time money this year. We made a motion similar 2 years ago with a less robust three-year MYP, and we didn't close shop. So I think we actually gave $200,000 to secondary and elementary students 2 years ago. So my motion was to use this year's one-time money to increase the budget for supplies for students, not ongoing.
So that it would revert back next year should we would have to bring it forward again.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. I just want to give some relief this year.
Okay.
But we have the opportunity to do so.
I think Sheila had a question.
Okay, I have a comment to that and a question for Jim. The comment is, I feel better with what you've clarified, Deb. I also, the way I look at it is, if we decide that this is a crucial expenditure, then in the next couple of years, we have to decide what, if it has to replace something on the budget, what it is. Mm-hmm. So my thinking is, I don't really want to go year by year by year in the long run, but in the short run, we have to look at the whole budget and figure out, can we give that kind of money, and will it mean we're having to cut something else? So I'm happy to do it now with the proviso that the administration knows that what we want to do is look at continuity with that amount. And then, so that's my one thing. And Chris, is that true that you get that aspect of what we're saying?
Yes.
Okay. And the other thing is, the PTAs have been giving $25 per student. And my sense is that they are the closest to what the need is with the teachers in the elementary school. Now, the middle school and the high school, I don't know as well, except of my still traumatic memories about having to bring everything to the teachers when my daughter was there. My question is, what is the difference in cost to the district if we were to match the 25 that the PTA seemed to have decided was the adequate amount to give, as opposed to the $20 that you think is very easy and possible?
Well, you also have to recall, Member Coonerty, that the 20 is in addition to the 15 the district's already.
Right, but that, I understand that, but that money generally runs the central office and the central needs. So I'm looking at what the PTA thinks is needed on top of that, and my inclination is to believe that they have a good finger on the pulse. So I'm wondering what the difference is in cost to us if we were to match them as opposed to do the 20.
Well, you're increasing another $5 per student.
Which
we have 6,500 students in the district, or 6,800 based upon there. So you're looking at another
34,000. Total would be $175,000 if we have 7,000 students. So we can take that number as the baseline. So
the other people, if I just may add one thing as far as when we look at this piece, and again, as you talk about year, not just year to year, but a 3 year piece out. Remember, this is our first step also right now for the 16-17 budget year. So these are all. This is all the information that we then look at in response to both of the comments. That what can we do this year immediately, and what can we also maintain over the next couple of years? And also what we have to do is, for example, is, especially from the business side of the house, is what are the other needs? We say, oh, 175 doesn't seem like that much when we have, you know, 348,000 above the 3% in year three. But I can tell you that, again, one thing we're very clear on, we all know, is that we have tremendous multiple needs throughout the district. Okay. We've had, just in the last couple of days, an increased number of our buses break down on the road actually carrying our kids. So now I'm having to look at and get some information regarding having to purchase another vehicle immediately. And where does that come from? It comes from the same pot of money and we also have to look at in the out years. But that's another immediate expense we have to come back with a recommendation to the board. And that's why when I come forward and say, yes, what do I feel comfortable with right now? Because we know it's a very urgent issue. We heard this last year as far as the LCAP. That's where I feel very comfortable with the $20 per increase, because on the other hand, we also know what other departments are needed right now throughout the district and maybe needed just as quickly as this in the classroom.
Okay, so the motion is 20. And do you have more questions?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm sorry, but Deb, now I would like to hear from Deb. Deb, what's your thinking about having a motion that's 20 as opposed to 25?
I actually like to round the total amount up to $200,000 to kind of address some of our school's equity issues around fundraising. Some students just have more need, so I think it's good for schools for well. But that's my thinking since you asked.
Up to $120,000, which would be more than the 25?
$200,000.
Which would be more than the 25.
Yes.
Okay, and what's your thinking? I mean, I heard you're thinking about that.
I've already made the motion, but I would like to hear if anybody else has an opinion or what your thoughts are on that issue for equity.
Any opinion? All the lights are on, so I don't know who's next.
And I'd also like to hear from the public, too. So.
Yeah.
Yes.
So, the budget that's provided that we're working off of, Jim, can you please help me to make sure that I understand it does not reflect any bargaining units that we have not closed. So we still have numbers that are not reported on those bottom line dollars for ongoing expenses for we have not closed our bargaining within one of our units. So that number would decrease should we close that. That we have to know. The next is that is this best policy? I have no problem with this conversation, but to do this right here and now, I think we have a meeting in a month. We've had a governance calendar that's been very responsive. Could we have scenarios to what this could look like at level A, level B, level C? And not just for this particular issue, but for any issue. So we're not driven by emotion because, yes, these years are getting better. But this district, for those who have lived here secularly, have seen better years go down quickly. The governor will not be here past 18, and we do not know what direction we're going. So I'm looking at this not to dismiss the needs, not that they're not being heard, not that I don't want to bring these things forward, but is it best policy to do this without the information brought forward?
Okay, Allison and Deb.
I don't think we're doing this emotionally. I think we're looking at having funding. I think that, and I'm not just thinking about the elementary schools, I'm also thinking about the high schools. I've heard from chemistry teachers that are struggling to teach AP chemistry or their chemistry classes because they don't have the necessary supplies. I think it's, we need instructional materials in the classroom to teach well. And if we have the funding, if we have the money to be able to do that, and you're telling us confidently that you feel like, you know, we can make this move, I think that it's important to, we have parent fundraisers that hung in there through lean years and filled in a lot of gaps, and now we have the opportunity to, you know, make a change that will significantly shift their fundraising efforts so that they can look at enrichment instead of supplies and provide, you know, just a stronger instruction for all of our kids. I think it's being responsive to what we have to make sure that the kids in our classrooms now are getting access to the new numbers.
Amen.
Deb?
I was just going to comment that, you know, yeah, classroom necessities aren't emotional, they're necessities, and I would like for our PTAs to be able to find enrichment. And to be pragmatic, we asked the PTAs to go out and give us funds to help support our parcel tax measures, which were very successful, and we're going to do it again next year. And I just would like to have an opportunity for them to recoup some of that effort and to feel some relief, and it's just classroom necessities. I mean, that is what we should be paying for, so that's why I don't think it's emotional, I think it's just pragmatic.
Okay, Sheila, and then we're going to go to the public.
Okay, yeah, because I want to hear from the public, too. I agree with Deb that to me, Catholic classroom supplies aren't an extra. to me, it's been a sin that we have not been able to supply them to our students for a very long time. And so at the chance that we have the capacity to do it, I think that we have to do it. And I know that Chris and I spoke about this before this ever became an issue. I mean, before it came out as an issue with the PTAs, that this was something we had to do. So the question in my mind is, at what level, which I think also is what Deb's asking. Mm-hmm. The $20 that you feel very comfortable with, or the $25 that the PTA felt very comfortable with, or more. And my inclination at this point, before I hear from the public, is to say the $25 feels about right. But I would like to hear what the public has to say, too.
Comments from the public?
Tim Hatson, Vice President of Parsons PTA.
I'm Anna Turner, President of PTA.
Laura, could you speak up just a little louder if possible?
Yes, sure.
I hear the last two.
Marianne, would you repeat the last two?
Repeat the last two. You can't see the other person.
Okay. I'm Anna Turner, the President of the Westlake PTA.
And
Marianne Campbell, President of Gulf PTA. Okay, we have a short letter to read. Dear board members, as funding for Santa Cruz City Schools begins to improve from the drastic cuts we've experienced since 2008, the parent-teacher organizations of the four comprehensive elementary schools would like to provide some input on spending options that will improve the learning environment for students. Parents, PTAs, and teachers have become the primary providers of basic classroom supplies as the district was forced to cut back expenses. We feel that the district can now afford to resume bearing this cost. We ask that the district fund supplies this year at the level of $25 per elementary student and consider a slightly higher amount for students qualifying for free and reduced lunch. The district proudly provides a fifth grade science curriculum that includes the outdoor science school. Parents contribute funds to reduce the district's expense as they are able at the district's request. Additionally, the PTAs have been asked to provide $5,000 to defer expenses. We ask that the district this year bear the costs currently carried by the PTAs. We believe that the $340,000 improvement shown in the first interim report of the unrestricted budget allows for these modest requests. When the budget for the 2016-17 year is created, we ask that these same costs be included and hope that the financial situation allows for consideration of transferring other costs that are currently borne by the PTAs, such as staffing costs for Life Lab instructors, teacher aides, and supplemental playground coaches. We appreciate the responsible governance the board has shown in the recent difficult budget years and are pleased with the additional student-focused spending made in the current budget, such as front office staffing improvements, counselors, and playground coaches. We look forward to participating in further discussions to strengthen the community life and learning environments of our students. The PTAs look forward to returning our focus to providing enrichment opportunities for educational assemblies, teacher needs, campus projects, and higher levels of learning opportunities. Thank you.
May I tag on to the end of that just around what Deb was saying about the possibility of what we mentioned in here about a possibility of a slightly higher amount for the free and reduced lunch. There is a higher fundraising burden on schools that have those kinds of populations, and it's just a lot more difficult for us to get our money, and our money's more tightly. That's not true. We all have to use every ounce of the money we get, however much it is, but it is a little bit harder to raise funds, so I would like to put a little extra push for that idea, if it's possible to maybe tag on a little extra for that, as we mentioned.
Thank you.
Thanks
for
this. It's great.
I have been attending these board meetings for 18 years, and I have been at a whole lot of board meetings where the budget has been cut to the bone because we didn't have any other choice. This is a one-time opportunity, and I think that your return will serve if you go ahead and the business about the equity between the schools is something very dear to my heart as well. I urge you to seize the initiative and exercise a little leadership and provide something that's been very necessary for a very long time. Thank you so much for listening.
Other comments?
Greetings and a couple of things. First, the budget conversation. As Jim said at the Budget Advisory Committee yesterday, $1.4 million for the ROP classes has already been put into the 17-18 budget. And you've got a 3.48%, and you don't have the $2.5 million in revenue that's coming to cover that from Measure O. That hasn't been included. So when 2 years' worth of Measure O monies come in, your 3.48 reserve goes up around to 11. And obviously there are going to be things you're going to want to do with it, but some of the key expenses that it was meant to cover have already been covered. So you're in such amazingly good shape. And the reason you are is because the parents supported you. Santa Cruz City Schools is going out for a bond. The percent increase or the percent success rate is was slightly lower in Measures O and B than it was in I and J. And I think you can think of this as your first push to support the bond. Parents, you're gonna go to parents for that. And if you then, right immediately after they support you on O and B, you come right back and say thank you and support them with this, I think you're doing great things to keep your commitment and your promises to them. And you're really supporting them. One final side note, I was talking to Jean Gardner from the County Office of Education at the meeting yesterday, and I asked her, what do you think of the district spending some of that $348,000? She said, as long as it's over 3%, we don't care. That'd be great. Go for it. Whatever you want to do with it, it's fine with her. Of course, as Jim would then say, she said, yeah, but she wants about 10% cash reserve. But we won't go there for that conversation. But you clearly are in such great fiscal shape. Congratulations, Jim, and your staff and for everything you've done, that to do this and to support the $5,000 for a piece of curriculum. I mean, outdoor school isn't something extra. It's part of the curriculum. And for parents having to be fundraising for that, to add that $20,000 on that, to support the Frel students, you've got plenty of money. You're not talking about $340,000 right now. You're talking about more like $3.4 million you're going to have as your reserve in that year. And that's going to be plenty to support significant raises and support that for your teachers and staff. So you're in such a wonderful position this year that to take this opportunity to do it now, right away, would be a great move politically. Thank you.
Any other comments for the public? Hey, Patty?
So thank you for those comments. And yes, as a chair and one of the co-chairs who work very hard, we do realize that there will be dollars that are shaken out. And I do want to acknowledge that I hear exactly what Jeremy's saying. And I think when I use the word emotion, I think we're all emotional because we finally do have a little bit of money moving our way. And I will tell you that 2 years ago, I do remember the conversation in the same manner. So what I would like to motion and thoughts about this is my biggest concern is that we don't have to come back yearly to do this, is that we do this. And I just want to comment that if we do this, that we want, I would like to see it ongoing. Because what would be more disappointing is to be going out for that bond and then coming back and letting these PTAs know that you fundraised to this level and you've had a bit of a slush, but we're coming back and we're going to tell you there's a different need, some other succeeding need. So I just wanted to say that, Deb, I think that's great. I would hope that we could keep it at the 20 mark and then next year be able to move it up to 25 or to that 2,000 mark when we have some responsible numbers reported.
Jeremy?
Yeah, we have a plethora of exciting things to think about, none of which I'd like to vote on tonight.
I'd like to vote on them when we hear back. Here's a few. Should this money that I support we spend be one-time money or ongoing? That's an interesting and a rich discussion we can have. Should this money be divvied up equally, or should extra monies be set aside for schools that have perhaps a higher percentage of students who are on free and reduced lunch? Should this money be increased by $20 or $25? So those are three things that are well worth waiting until the next school board meeting, in my opinion, to hear about and then to vote on. And I will certainly support this. But I think it would be wise to let this sink in, have thoughts on this, have further discussion on this, because any one of these three issues does require some thought. One time or ongoing, certain schools may have a harder time raising money than other schools, so how do we balance that out? Or $20 or $25. That's worth getting right the first time. That's okay. What I think.
Thank you. Thank you. Dee Dee.
I am very much in favor of supporting this, but I think you're right. This raises a lot of options that we want to consider very carefully. I'm particularly interested and in favor of the issue of equity across the sites, particularly for those sites that have a higher population of low-income students. And I know the challenges. I've been in those school sites as a parent. I know the challenges in raising funds when everyone's tapped out, but those parents in particular are tapped out. And so I'm trying to figure out, well, how would we do that responsibly and equitably? And yeah, it's going to take some time for us to figure out those components. So yeah, that's what I was saying.
Sheila, and then we'll go back.
I can't see. I'm so sorry.
You have
go ahead.
Okay. So, Jeremy, and Dee Dee, I'm curious if you would be happier with a. I know we have a motion on the table. But would you be happier with a motion that said we're going to direct the administration to give us those options in January because we want to move in this direction and we'll decide on the specific options at that time? Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
Yes.
Thank you for helping me with that.
Wondering if Deb would consider that as an amendment or not.
Allison is next.
I'm next. So first of all, I want to say that while I totally appreciate our parents and the amazing work that they do and the complexity of requesting support for parcel tax and issues like that and the politics of it, this is not about anything other than doing our responsibility to provide instructional materials for classrooms. That's how I see this. Mm-hmm. I have a suggestion to amend it to maybe find common ground and address the equity issue, which would be to fund at $20 a student, but $25 a student for a student to qualify for free and reduced lunch. And that would be an easy way to figure out an allocation, and it would provide more money for schools that have higher percentages of students that live in poverty.
Deb?
Well, I accept that amendment, and I will say that I understand it feels like we need to think and talk. This is the first interim. We're not mm-hmm. accepting the first interim budget next board meeting. Mm-hmm. So we're setting priorities now mm-hmm. for going forward in the second. So this is the time to make a decision at this level, and I don't think it's
I think having direction or having the suggestion from our CBO last night at BAC at a dollar amount that I suggested, and then also listening to what our parent community is saying makes total sense. So I do accept the amendment to increase the amount for FRL students to $25 this year.
Okay. Dee Dee?
Well, she said we were saying $20 per student, but for students that qualify for FRL would be $25. So I don't know what the actual dollar amount would be.
$175,000.
Does that make sense?
Dee
Dee? So you're saying 25 for all students?
No.
20, or 25 just for the...
20, increase to 20, and the students who qualify for 12 for FRL, and 25 every student.
So I'm gonna just do a kind of point of process. We had a first on the table that had already been seconded, and we then went to make a friendly amendment. I think we have to let this motion die.
Not for friendly amendment. She can accept it.
Even after a second has been made?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
She made the motion.
Okay, I just wanted to...
Unless then we have to vote on the amendment.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we're just amending the
motion. Mm-hmm. Jeremy, you're next.
Maybe 25 is too little. Maybe 20 is too much. I really think we can wait 1 month. It would be prudent so that we can get this right and ask for numbers to be crunched and needs to be assessed so that we can be precise, because we don't know what the best numbers are. We're speculating. And I think the audience and I think all the board members understand we're going to do this. But I don't know about these numbers. And I want to be honest about that. And I'd like more information. It's really simple.
Okay, Sheila?
Thank you.
Sheila, you.
Deb? What do you think about accepting as an amendment what Jeremy is saying? Okay.
Call a motion?
So I would like to motion.
Well, we have a motion.
You can't. There's a
we
motion
have a motion on.
Motion on
the table.
The motion is going.
Yeah. Okay, is everybody clear what the motion is?
Can you repeat it?
Okay. So we fund $20 of supplies at an additional $20 per student with we fund $20 per student, increasing the number to 25 for students who are on free and reduced lunch, in addition to the supply dollars that are already allocated to each site.
For the year?
For the 2015-16 school year.
The current year.
One time.
Mm-hmm. All in favor? You have what?
I have a question.
Okay.
What would there be a difference in when the effect of this motion should be approved is recognized in schools if it were to be approved now or in our January meeting?
Good question. So, Jim?
When we talk about the budgets for the 15-16 school year, so we make adjustments throughout the whole time. So it could be done today, or not today. It could be done tomorrow, it could be done next month.
So in terms of impact to the classroom, if it were to be approved now, teachers could start filling it within this month, or?
That might be a challenge because of the short month remaining here.
And
they may want to plan on how they're going to use the dollars. I'm not working at the site, so I couldn't answer that.
There would be like an accordion delay if we waited for the amount of time for our next meeting, there would be a delay until the impact. Thank you.
Hey, Jeremy.
Deb, I'd like to ask you a question, and I do think you understand that I support doing this, and I do think I've made my position clear that I'd like to wait to get numbers crunched. But
we've been a very trusting and open and even at times jovial school board, and I don't want to jeopardize that. So why is it important to you, if you wouldn't mind explaining to me, to do this right now? And are you hearing me that I'm a little concerned that if we don't go through this process, we might not get this as right as we could? So how are you balancing those two things?
Well, why is it that you're asking?
If you don't mind. Thank you.
To be perfectly honest, I don't have confidence that if we wait until January, that the numbers will be the work, that we will be able to carry it off. I feel like setting priorities now and starting the semester, the new fourth semester, with the supplies in hand is important. I feel very strongly about it, and I think we're being conservative in the numbers. I think you're right. I think, you know, we could probably go higher, but I think this is a responsible and responsive time to do it, and that's my feeling.
Thank you.
Hey, Didi?
I think she just answered my question.
Okay, thank you. And Sheila?
I just wanted to say that as a policy, I think Jeremy's right. I think that we need to have an overall picture of the budget, and we certainly don't want to give to our middle schools or our high schools or anybody else the impression that, you know, we've left on one thing and there's other needs that may match it. So I think the policy is right, and there are some other things that are on the table with this budget that I would hope that what we would do is ask the administration to set it up so that we can look at it and make decisions in the broad picture of everything we have to decide. On the other hand, I think that there's a compelling argument for, we've been talking about increasing the supplies since well before this, and we're halfway through the year. And I think that Deb kind of very passionately said it, you'd like to see the supplies in the classroom, and I think I would like to see the supplies in the classroom. And we, because it's a year, we have in our favor the fact that if we see that this wasn't enough or it didn't work right, then when we decide to have an ongoing amount that we're talking about funding, we can do it right. So that's convinced me enough, despite the fact that Jeremy, I think you have a very good point. But I'm thinking that this is something that has been overdue.
Jeremy?
So what I'm hearing you say, Sheila, is that we support this now, knowing that, or I don't want to be putting words in your mouth, knowing that we come back and revisit it at a later date, if and when we decide to make this ongoing, and if and when we decide to make this ongoing, we do ask for a long-term, multi-year projection numbers so that we can have a sense of how this plays out.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Student recommendation.
Can I just add a comment?
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I don't think, well, I understand Jeremy's concerns, and I really appreciate having that kind of lookout going into how we spend our money. I think in this particular case, there's not really a wrong way to fund supplies in the classroom, especially coming out of the kind of financial difficulties we have. I know someone earlier mentioned, like, chemistry classrooms, and I've seen teachers, you know, buy notebooks for the students that can't afford it, and I've, you know, heard teachers discuss how best to give students the experience of a lab, considering that they have such a small budget that, like, for our AP Environmental Science class, you know, some of our supplies are coming out of local ponds because we can't afford the recommended plant life for what we're studying. So after that, I would recommend that we approach the motion.
Sorry.
Somebody take his light.
Sorry.
Okay, Jeremy.
Could I hear the motion one more time?
Hey.
I think we're getting there.
Nancy's a lot better at it.
Sing it.
Sing it. You don't want me to sing it.
we add an additional $20 for student supplies, increasing that dollar per student to $25 for the students who are on free and reduced lunch for the 2015-16 school year.
That's it.
That's it.
Claudia, can I just ask a quick question of Jeremy's comment? You wanted it then to come back to the board for a further discussion of whether it's ongoing or not, the supply. Is that what you just said?
No.
I said... Come back later. That you agreed that this, that you said the board should look at it at a later date also.
I said that if the board chooses to look at it at a later date...
The board chooses. Okay.
If the board chooses to look at it at a later date to take this ongoing monies, I think it would behoove us to have multi-year projections at that time to see how this $140,000 or $160,000 a year cost impacts the budgets for 3 years out.
Great, and I would just invite you to include the $5,000 a year that each of the elementary schools are paying for outdoor school in that search when you have the chance.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? Abstain? The motion carries at 7-0. And we will have a 5-minute break.
Okay.
I'm sorry. Excuse me. I got it. The item on the agenda, you mean?
Yeah.
Okay. Do I have a motion to approve? Okay, Alexandra.
I actually think there are some other things that have to be discussed before we close this item.
Yep.
I hate to keep everybody wide awake.
Okay, well, let's get our motion on, then we'll open it to questions or comments.
Yeah.
Okay.
Deb moved and I seconded.
Uh-huh.
So okay. Who first?
Sheila.
Deb.
Okay. The elephant's in the room. I think that there's two other issues that the PTA brought to our attention that I think that we would be neglectful not to address in some way, even if it is to talk about putting it on the agenda for later. And because the PTA asked us to think about three things. One of them was life lab expenditures, and the other was the science camp. So I have a personal question about one of those, and I feel really bad asking if Chris could address it because she's doing all the typing. But I am wondering... my perception of the science camp issue is that it, not only here, but across the state, it is paid for by the parents, that it is a fee and not a donation, and that we are pretty much in line with everybody else. I don't know if that perception is right. And so I wanted to know that first.
So this is one of the very few things that Ed Code allows you to charge a fee for. But outdoor school is one of them. Conservation camps is the other. And across the state, PTAs and students or primary parents are primarily paying for it. Some districts provide a little bit of support. We currently are paying for stipends for teachers for the event. We're paying for transportation. And we have covered amounts that have gone over the $5,000 of need that PTAs have raised. So if there's more need than $5,000, we've covered that as a district. So it is uniform that it's an activity that's fundraised for across the state.
So I have a couple more questions, but I don't know.
I would just say, and I'm really excited to hear that Mark Stone is working to try to find money for it, because it's hard to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I was a principal at a school where I was responsible for doing all the fundraising for the, you know, with parents and teachers for the transportation and the stipends in addition to the nightly cost. It's hard to do. It's really hard to do.
Helene and I have a question. We put on a great protocol on the last item.
What?
We just have a question, comment on the last thing, and it will be Matt did too. From the teacher's perspective.
On this item or on the last item?
On the last item.
Oh, okay.
On the budget. Okay. Because not the budget. The question is the supplies. How are you going to make sure that money actually finds its way into the class?
We want to,
because
we
money
think
has
it's
been,
great, but we want to make sure the money gets
the money gets to the classroom, that it doesn't get tied up in administration or other purposes, and that money actually goes into classroom budgets.
Goes to Jeremy's point.
I can speak to how.
No, don't go anywhere. We like you.
We like you.
It's a little messy because that's not usually how we can't give money directly to teachers, except in the form of a paycheck. So I know that at the elementary schools, there were a couple of different ways of doing it, whether it was teachers determining that they would buy their supplies at Palace, so they would get a purchase order for that amount. So I think that they were somewhat fluid with the response, but they were firm around this dollar amount, so this per student dollar amount, went to that classroom. I think that's probably the way we have to do it, because you can't give the money directly to teachers. So
that's fine, as long as it doesn't go into it.
So I think that's with elementary we're looking at per classroom, but when we move into secondary, that's where we have to be really looking at what classes have more extraordinary needs than others. So for example, lab classes have ongoing consumable needs. There are classes that may not have as many needs. So I think that's going to be another round of decision making.
Can I just add that I'd recommend that we ask principals to work with their teacher leadership teams to make a plan to best allocate these dollars based on student needs.
That's our concern, is that it not just get decided that teachers have input into the classes. Right?
Yeah.
So do we need to make that recommendation to you, Chris, or is that you're already making that recommendation?
I would make a recommendation, and you could direct me to do that.
So
yeah. So wait, they have to direct you with a motion, or we just direct you?
I don't think it needs
to. It doesn't need to be a motion.
Before you guys direct. I know at Santa Cruz High School, there's always compelling needs. Dollars for a textbook clerk, copy paper. Faculty are going to want to know that the dollars are going to go to classroom supplies. I think if you include that in your resolution, then folks will be more comfortable. Just knowing that, it's not for site-based needs, it's for classroom supplies.
So I'm not finished with science, but I think that maybe we should back up.
That was in the motion that it was in.
It was.
I think
an allocation for classroom supplies.
And I think we understand. We're hearing.
Okay. Oh my God! Now I have to remember.
I know
where
we have more questions.
I just want to make sure that you remember.
No, I do. Thank you. I will remember this time, Jeremy.
I was going to.
You had what? You have more questions?
Yeah, about the science.
Are you on this, Jeremy? Because go ahead if you are.
I
was on science.
I
was on science camp.
No. No, I'm not on science camp.
So I guess finish this up first.
Oh, thank you. We said $20 or $25, but of course there are teachers who are not at 100% at the middle schools and high schools and some at the elementaries, so that's going to need to be very precisely worked out, because that's an equity issue. Then I really want to second what our union representatives have said, that we want this money to be with teachers directly, so that it can go directly into their classrooms. And so I would like to ask the administration, if the board thinks it's appropriate, to hear an update
at our next meeting in January as to how they're proceeding to implement this and to give us a report as to how it's going and how these monies are getting into the hands of teachers directly so that they can be used for students directly, and to put that perhaps on the agenda so that the public and the union and can comment on it. Does that sound right to the other members that we make that direction?
We need to make a motion to make a direction.
It will be difficult for us to tell you at the first meeting in January, given the timeline of where we are right now and when principals are set to meet with their leadership teams to have a conversation about this. It might take us till February to be able to tell you what the plan is for expenditure and allocation.
Sounds good.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Jim, your light is on.
Yes, members first.
Okay. The next person is Allison. Did you want to go ahead? Okay.
Are we done with that topic?
Okay. We're on first interim. What do you mean? What topic?
I was talking about the science camp.
Okay.
Okay, so I wanted to go back to that. My feeling is about that the issue, if we go into the weeds of the science camp, it's clear that the science camp is paid for by parents, a fee for what is a form of a long field trip. But we haven't addressed the needs of the PTAs in saying that. And so I think that this has to be a motion, that I would like to have us direct the administration to meet with the PTAs and see if we can identify other ways that we may be able to relieve the pressure on them in terms of their fundraising and find other ways besides science camp to do that. I think that's a motion.
You know, it's already done. We have a meeting scheduled for next Tuesday. So I think you can do that without a motion and just say that we have a meeting scheduled for next Tuesday, and I'll make sure that what I was going to talk to them about is priorities and their requests, and I can bring that up.
I think the only reason I wanted to make it as a motion is because it does involve the budget. It involves, it'll come back to us as, if you want to do this, then these are the kind of funds that you would have to approve. So I wanted to make it a formal thing as opposed to a meeting where it could get vague. That, to my mind, it's the board saying, can you look at what they're spending and whether there is another way that we can be relieving to them, financially speaking. So that's why I wanted to make it a motion. And
so can I clarify? Mm-hmm. Are you asking me to bring, you know, to talk to them, take what their input and bring that back to you in the form of a recommendation? I'm unclear exactly.
Or a series of choices. It might not be a recommendation.
Point of order.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, I'm not sure that it has to be a motion to do that. And we do have a motion on the table right now that's been first and seconded. So I think we have to fulfill that motion before we can make another motion moving forward.
This is just accepting the report.
Which motion do we have?
We're accepting the report. Approving the interim report.
So it doesn't involve the money of the report.
No.
Okay, all right.
Okay, all in favor? Patty, I'm sorry.
Just to the conversation that Sheila was having, and thank you, Ms. Monroe, for being ahead of the game and reaching out with the PTOs and PTA. I just want to be clear that you'll also be meeting with the middle school and high school fundraising groups. They go by different names.
Yeah, they do. And I was thinking it might be good for me to have a meeting a couple times a year with our parent group presidents.
Perfect. And then the last piece to that is, you know, at small schools we have different needs, and I don't even know if some of those students have supportive parent groups that follow them. So if we could find a way to, whether it's with the site leadership or maybe even with the teachers themselves who work with the needy students day to day, have the conversation with them. And as I say this and as I listen to Sheila, I also want to point out that this is kind of leaning towards what we call the LCAP. Thank you.
Just as we approve the first interim, I just want to make sure that we capture as a priority the need that's come up again and again about, and that we consider textbook clerks for our high schools. So I just want to put that out there. We don't need to do anything with it, but I'd like to continue to capture that as a priority for our high schools. I think we're ready.
And now.
The moment.
All President Estelle, if I may just...
Yeah.
And my role to you is, you know, to make the recommendations for the district. So as we make these recommendations to you, whether it's at BAC or board study session, formally in front of the public at the board meeting, our team is set with making sure we have as much information as possible and bringing forward any type of numerical figure. So as we bring this one, I appreciate the conversation, especially now adopting or approving the first interim, just for the things that are in play right now that we talked about at first interim, that's going to be the BAC and the board study session. The state no longer funds instructional materials. That comes out of our local funding. We're looking at a $500,000 to $700,000 expense to adopt core curriculum and math by the end of this year or next year. Those are the things that we look at as money begins to fall. We're also looking at the increased necessity for transportation. We look at the increased pieces of technology. So again, all I do is try to make the best recommendation based upon the current information that we have in place. So just needed to add those pieces of it of why we come forward with a positive or strong recommendation based upon we know the multiple needs throughout the district. So thank you.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstained? 5 minutes?
5 minute break.
Okay. We have quite a bit still on our
5 minutes. Yeah.
My daughter called me 10
minutes.
I'm really sorry. I'm very sorry. What happened was one of us. My all right, just don't tell me because I don't have to hold on. Okay, now, can you hear me? Okay, so when I called you, I thought I needed a certain patient because I was feeling very busy and like I was going to pass out of the and I didn't want to drink
pass down to you.
Then I ate a bunch of all the food that I took from you. I didn't die. Somebody would have answered the phone.
Exactly. No problem. Thank you. All right.
Then the way you know.
Thank you so much. All of us, thank you for your questions. Thank you for your assistance. Just thank you, Mike. It's really appreciated.
Thank you. Because you really kind of I need to know how serious it was.
It's just great, and I love that you guys expanded it out to the secondary and then to the secondary.
Yeah. Well, and that was Chris's idea.
And she's absolutely right.
Lots of smart stuff going on, but I think we have to do it with the whole picture.
Yeah.
I mean, my first inclination was to wait till January.
Yeah.
And then I just felt like, no, we can't.
Well, yeah, you really made a point. You said, normally I would, but now I'm not going to. And I love it. Thank you so much, Allison. I really, we just very much appreciate everything you guys are bringing to this.
And we appreciate you guys coming. And you know, letting us know that this was an issue. Because without that, we're thinking it, but we don't know that people are.
You said, I think they got their finger on their thumb on the pulse of it, and it is true, you know. So anyway, very much appreciate it. Look at you guys.
And thank you for coming, because I knew it was
in the middle of the night.
Yeah. And then we got to go. And I still have to stay here.
Last night talking to her about this.
I know.
In the middle of the night, guys, before talking about
this. It's been a tremendous amount of pre-conversation went into this, and you could tell that there was, like, just a tremendous amount of thought. And that, I just went, like, I just felt this weight lifting off my shoulders. But it's going to be so great to move on.
And please let the people who think that we are just yes on board.
Oh my gosh, no.
No.
Are you kidding? I'm going to be talking you guys up. I'm getting a sandwich board and I'm walking around. Thank you very much. Bye. 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 Bye.
Nancy wasn't feeling well.
The PTAs have already given the district this year. It's not this issue.
You've got a whole.
No, I know, but one last time for you.
That's a really short conversation.
Right. So. Yeah. Okay.
That was fun, wasn't it?
Yeah.
We came out with
an agreement. They have a second intern report.
Right.
And the science camp discussion.
Right, absolutely. I mean, the interim reports are where we're supposed to have these discussions.
Yeah.
So, yeah, absolutely. Thanks, Jim.
5 years now, but I just
lost. I was going to grab the white jelly out.
How long does it take you to get the
3.5 hours.
Yeah. You get 7 hours.
How many do they take the pieces? I go over the Chippewa Pass. and then through Los Banos to 99, and then down.
So what do you think we should do?
Can we?
Just do that?
It's a report. It's a staff report. It's not an approved item.
That would be great.
Yeah, I mean, that's the only one we can have, really. You're looking at this.
I just think that, yeah. She's got a really bad sinus infection, and I've been trying to get her to stay home for days.
Okay, I thought maybe something happened to her parent. Or
no, and Molly has a really sick kid at home, so
right. She kept walking out to cough.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. She's just all...
Yeah.
I think.
Okay, we should start. Maybe we're not going to start.
Let's make decisions.
All in favor.
I was trying so hard to get a vote.
Oh, man.
We have to do the annual developer phase and the school board and the tentative agreement. We still have four things.
And they're not.
Oh, and another meeting.
And another
board
meeting.
Reorganization.
Yeah. So we need. So, Jim, annual developer fee, are we ready?
Yeah, we're
we're going to
move it.
We're
going
to not do it.
We're going to reconvene.
We're going to do it. I know, I said, can we do that?
Hey, due to the late...
We didn't have to make a decision on it. It was just a presentation.
Due to the late time, we're going to postpone our LCAP report and have that at the next meeting. So we're moving on to our 9.3.4, the annual developer fee report.
Thank you again, President Vestal. I hope this presentation is just a little bit shorter. Anyway, this is the annual report that's required of us as a district to explain what we receive as far as developer fees, which is our Fund 25. And kind of tying back to the last presentation of our other funds, these are funds that come from development within the Santa Cruz City School District. So what this does, it breaks down on an annual basis the dollars that we received, what we've expended, and the type of programs that we expended it on. And so this is an annual report that must be presented to you to the board. It just ties up that particular fund to show how, especially from the building industry, of what the funds have gone to. Also in January, we'll be bringing back an actual five-year report, which is an actual secondary requirement of this Fund 25 that'll come in and explain all of our activity for the last 5 years. So it's just a report that ties in the fund, much smaller fund compared to what we do in the general fund, but within the super fund.
Any other questions?
Really? We're going to have them. We don't know.
Comments from the public. Their motions.
Move to approve.
I'll second.
Okay, Allison and Deb. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? We'll come back. Abstain? 7-0.
Thank you.
Please come back.
Okay, our next item is. Staff report of the board policy.
So tonight I'm bringing to you it's an informational report, and I'd like to get some direction. It's not a vote. The board has a policy on release of directory information for students, and we currently have different groups that we allow parents to opt out of directory information being released to the military, to our partners in the Education Foundation, those kind of partnerships. And we have a new request from another one of our partners, the police department, for us to ask parents whether or not they'd be comfortable with releasing directory information to them that would be used for the SRO to contact parents directly when they're working with, when he's working with kids. The law currently states that unless we involve the SRO in directly in an investigation, we can't give him any information on a student. Mm-hmm. So if he happens to come into contact with students, you know, when he's out and about at lunchtime, has a conversation with them, wants to follow up with parents, we can't give him that information. Mm-hmm. And the police department really see this as part of their work to build relationship with kids, relationship with the community, being able to reach out to families as they do work in partnership with us in the district. So what I'd like to do is we're going to have more people that we're doing release from. We're also getting requests from our partner school districts for release of information to communicate with students that are graduates from their school districts, like Soquel and Live Oak, that would like to reach out to their former students and communicate with them as they've left, and to, you know, connect with them on what their experience has been post their time in their school districts. So I would, I'm bringing forward to you that I'm looking to change the AR, and the board doesn't typically approve ARs, but I'm looking to change that AR to include more partners, and you see the draft here. Mm-hmm. As we work with our community partners and share, you know, contact information with parents, we don't take that lightly. Mm-hmm. We want to protect that for parents. This in this particular case, it's, you know, it's nothing more than you would find on someone's driver's license, mm-hmm. that is released to them. It's not student records. It's not that kind of information. We do share data with our partner districts, but it's anonymous data. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you can share data that has specific student names to it if there's a specific educational need that you're evaluating your programs. You're looking at how did 8th to 9th graders do in their math class moving from 8th to 9th grade. That data can be shared with a partner district because there's a specific educational need to do that and to articulate and evaluate a program. But generally speaking, that information is never shared, and it's only provided to parents or the whoever has educational rights overseeing a child. Mm-hmm. Does anybody have any questions or thoughts about this, things you want me to think about?
Go ahead, Sheila.
Okay. It totally makes sense, but I guess I'm wondering, number one, why it hasn't been that way. Is it on? Okay. Why it hasn't been that way before. So the history of making the decision they did, if there is one, or if we could possibly find out. And the second point would be, I don't have a feel for what community members might think of this, and I'm wondering if it's something that should be run by the PTA or something that would give a sense of, because it could be seen as a civil liberties issue, you know, privacy, right to privacy. It could be, or it may be that it's a no-brainer to them, that they thought it could already happen. But I know the university has this problem with communicating about students. And, you know, I had the experience of having a student who came to me who withdrew into their room, and nobody could notify anybody, you know. And then they changed the policy slightly so that the student could give permission, but the student was, you know, actively falling apart, and there was no notification process. So I understand what you're, the importance of trying to be able to make better communication, but I wonder if we ought to be checking with the community.
So what the nature of it is that parents get to choose. So what will be my responsibility is creating a document that goes into the first day packet that explains the purpose of the release and allows parents to opt out of releasing that information if they don't want to, with our partner districts, mm-hmm. or the military. That's the other thing that we have to check on. So I would create a document that would allow parents to opt out of releasing information to any of those, and has an explanation for it at the beginning of each school year.
That
could be changed at the beginning of each school year.
Thanks.
you know, so thank you, Sheila, because I had some thoughts along those lines, and thank you, Ms. Monroe, because I do understand the need for the sharing of information. But I would hope that two things could happen. One is that you use your legal for guidance around these matters, because they do sometimes appear or feel to be infringed upon the civil liberties, and also that we consider an opt-in as opposed to an opt-out. It has been my experience, I opt out consistently. I believe in the privacy of my particular student at the time, and found myself on these server lists. So, you know, we're only as responsible as the person who inputs the opt-outs. And a lot of parents will sign in those packets. When you have a packet that is 27 to 35 pages long, you just start signing. So I think it is something to consider, and I would be more than happy for an opt-in as opposed to an opt-out.
So I did consult with our legal counsel, and what I found out is we can't do an opt-in with military, that we risk losing our federal dollars, and they need to all be aligned, all of your directory information. So we need to do an opt-out for everything.
You don't go half or half
at
all?
You
can't.
Okay,
can't. So that makes sense.
And we don't want to risk losing our federal dollars by not doing it the way we're supposed to with the military.
It'll be difficult when parents, I mean...
Yeah. And it's just going to be really important that I make the document really clear. Mm-hmm. And it allows, people will have to go through each one, and we'll have to make it a mandatory document. And we're going to have to support the sites with the data entry, because it's very time consuming.
Well, and then, I'll stop there. Well, I would hope that it is not parent volunteers on these information, because a lot of times in those packets are sensitive information that came for free and reduced. And people may not have signed up for those programs because another parent is the volunteer who's looking at the information for input. So it would have to be along those levels.
It has to be staff.
Yeah. That's all that I would ask.
Any other comments or questions?
I basically had my light on, but you covered it. Just making sure that it's really clear, mm-hmm. and building in. If we have to, I'm not inclined to want military recruiters to have access to our student information, yeah. and if we have to do an opt out, just making sure that we have multiple checks to get people to know how to fill out the forms, mm-hmm. so that
support.
People can be proactive and opt out.
If we have an audience person,
oh, Mr. Luxton, Dr. Luxton.
I just have a comment. Some years ago, this was a very hot topic with this particular school board, and the federal government, because the board at that particular time would not allow recruiters to come on the campus, that they actually threatened the school district with the withdrawal of federal monies. I have complete confidence and trust in Chris, and I'm sure that she will exercise due diligence. But I can tell you from my own experiences as a high school administrator, those recruiters, they would be twisting arms. And I think our parents and our students deserve much better. So, again, I have yet most confidence in you about this. But this is... a very, very touching art thing. Mm-hmm. And at that particular time, of course, we had the draft, which made it even worse. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. So, Sal, a point of clarification. The form would have a checkbox to opt out from the directory information being provided to all of these.
Yes.
So, the military,
so there would be an explanation,
the S4C, mm-hmm. the local law enforcement, mm-hmm. all of them.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, and with an explanation of what the purpose would be for the release for each of those agencies.
Clarification on that. Do you mean that they, with one check, they would have to accept all of them?
No, with each one.
Yeah, okay. Check that's,
yeah. You know, each one would be separate.
Yeah, okay.
Did you get what you need?
What do you need?
So what I need from you is a sense of, are you okay with us moving in this direction?
It sounds like we don't have a choice.
Well, we could choose not to release any directory information to any partners. We have to do an opt-out for the military. That we don't have a choice about. But we could choose not to be releasing any directory information. But that we have partners that need it. We have partners that fundraise for us, and that's really, really important.
And we're not the military.
No, we wouldn't want to do that.
Right.
So it would be my recommendation that this is how we proceed, and I just wanted to talk to everybody about it, talk about the issues around it, make sure that we all understood why we were moving in this direction, and I wanted to make sure there was no strong objections to that.
No
objections.
Yes.
Just a quick question, thinking about this, and now that I'm not a parent within the school, how large are our packets? And would that be front page from your thought process? I mean, I know each site, there's so much that goes in.
I would see it being closely connected to our emergency cards, and it would be one of those forms that's mandatory to return. So, and yes, I'd like to find a way, and we haven't gotten to this yet, but it's been on our to-do list to explore how we do that paperwork better. I think about it every time I fill out both of my kids' forms and how much time it takes me. Mm-hmm. So I know there's got to be a better way. We just haven't gotten to figuring that out yet. But I'm reminded, like every other parent, as I sit down and think, there's got to be a better way. Yes. So.
Well, you read yours. I mean, this is where my concern is, that you know, I'd like to feel that the majority of things do.
The people know what they're doing.
The computer's talking to Angela. So, I feel like I'm sorry. I'm getting a little
confused. Oh, yeah, no.
So, but I think I have the direction I need. Thank you.
Okay. Our next item is 9.3.6. It's California School Boards Association delegate. Deb has been our delegate, and we need to nominate a candidate. Do we have any nominations?
Should I nominate Deb Tracy Prue to continue as our delegate?
I'll second that.
All right. Do you accept the nomination?
I do, thank you. Right.
You said yes, you did.
I do. I do accept.
All in favor?
Aye.
Do you have a question?
No, but I was hoping that Deb would explain out, you know, you said some of the things you do and your purpose, and I know that you were the alternate that moved up, and what you enjoy about this that makes you step up to it again.
I was the alternate for Cynthia Hawthorne, whose term expired this year, so I stepped into her role. And at the Assembly, it's very much a similar situation where delegates representing your region's caucus and talk about and are informed from CSBA about ongoing issues in legislature and also funding issues. And then we have an opportunity to vote and inform the governing body how to proceed in lobbying on our behalf, lobbying on the CSBA's behalf, and also keeping us up to date on calls to action. And that's something I was not as aware of, but I am now. But when we get recommendations from CSBA for us to show up for the Day of Actions in Sacramento, or to work with our union partners to show up and contact our representatives on certain issues. So sort of just being that next level of information at the state level. And what I enjoy about it is it's really interesting. You know, there's 1,000 school districts, so there's roughly 300, I think, delegates that were at the last meeting. It's just hearing best practices and experiences across the state and challenges across the state. And I'll let you guys know that Compton Unified School District, which is a pretty good-sized school district, is actually adopting our practice of having our board members represent regions within their city, because they were having a lot of issues and parents being upset and feeling unrepresented. Mm-hmm. And the last, in Sacramento, I spoke to their delegate. I made a conversation, and I made a contact with the district, and they're really pleased. So those kinds of connections, I think, are really important at the state level.
Good, thank you.
Yes. Thanks for doing it.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstained? Thank you, Deb. Okay, we have our tentative agreement.
I'm going to take this for Molly. We have a tentative agreement between our district and the Greater Santa Cruz Federation of Teachers Adult Education Unit. And our recommendation tonight is to approve that tentative agreement, knowing that we're going to be bringing back the report of the AB 1200 at the January 13th meeting. The fiscal impact, it's a one-time off-the-schedule payment of 2.5% for 14-15, which increase is projected to cost about $1,200. The 3% salary increase for 15-16 is projected to cost about $15,000. So we're looking for your approval.
Move approval.
Second.
Questions? Comments?
I guess I'm on the comment range. I'm just happy we're doing this because I think it was the only ethical thing to do, given that we did it for all the other teachers, and they're only going to be here for a year. But even without that, it is. So I appreciate the effort that was taken by the union as well as by our administration.
Comments from the public.
Just that we appreciated the non-contentious process of us asking for something that was reasonable, and the district coming back with a yes. That's the right thing to do. So I'm very appreciative, and the adult educators. I've been hearing that they feel valued because of this, and that's really important. So thank you to all.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Abstained? 7-0. Now we will move back to to the board reorg.
Okay, so annually we have our reorganization meeting. I want to start by thanking Claudia for serving in the role of president this last year, and thanking Patty for serving in the role of vice president. And it has been our tradition to give the president a plaque in thanks for their service.
And thank you.
I appreciate you for spending lots of hours with me and all your support.
It's a pleasure.
So this part of the meeting, we will be appointing a president, a vice president, and naming the superintendent as board clerk. So, and then after that, typically I would turn it over to the new president, but that new president will take over at the January 13th meeting, and I'm hoping we'll meet really soon.
We have a second meeting tonight.
Oh, we have a second meeting tonight.
We do.
So they can take over for the second meeting tonight.
We have our pajama party, our annual pajama party, right?
Can somebody take
over the pizza?
I want somebody to carry me home after.
The first item that we need to vote on is the election of a president, and I want to ask if there's a motion.
I nominate Allison.
Patty?
I'd like to have a conversation around this because it seems that it's Groundhog Day all over again. And one of the things, you know, I've thought about this long and hard, and there's a couple things that I'd like to bring up. One is that I think that the public is expecting from this board a collaborative behavior. And I think that anybody here at this table can serve as board president. They run the meeting. They sacrifice a great deal of time and work in conjunction with our superintendent. And, you know, I think that anybody could step up and do this job and do it well. It's a huge commitment of time. Deb, I know that you've pointed that out numerous times. But I do think that we as a board may want to consider a rotating manner so that it isn't in this behavior that it looks or appears to be anything other than business as usual, so that our cabinet can know what's going to happen. Because I think for students and for what's happened in this past year, I couldn't be more pleased. Claudia took the helm, continued with it. We've had a stable district. I think that continuity and behavior in this matter would serve our students and our superintendent. And so I would like the board to consider taking up in our governance calendar the possibility of maybe moving this to coincide with the school year, maybe to not this particular time, but take it up afterwards, that perhaps we elect a board president the last week in August. And then have some sort of conversation around a rotation. But for this, I'd like to second the motion because for me personally, as vice president, I know how much time you'll have to give. And there are some other areas that I really want to work on. I work very, very hard on Measures O and P, and I would like to follow through on that. And there are pieces in there around athletics as we move forward that I would like to be on a subcommittee and put my time in. So, Allison, I think you'll make a great president. I'd like to second that motion, but I do hope this board will have conversation about having a rotation as opposed to a constant election where it appears that there's always a jousting for position. Anybody here can do it.
I think that we need to look at the ed code on it because it's the ed code really ties our hands on when it can happen, but we could talk about how we do it. So should we put this on our governance? We're going to have our second meeting in January. We're going to limit the regular public items and use a chunk of that time for governance. Would you like me to make sure that that ends up on the governance? Would the board like me to make sure I get that on the governance calendar for us to talk about how we do this, how we do the board organization, and what our ongoing plan is around that?
I think that'd be great. And then I don't know, Allison, I second it, but I don't know if it's something you'd be willing to do.
I'd be honored to serve as the board president.
And it's a huge commitment of time, so I know that it'll put you in a terrible position as you have students that are graduating, but I know that you'll serve the board first. Thank you.
Dee?
I asked for this to be moved to last because I also want to second that request to have us talk about this as a governance. I want to thank you, Claudia, for all that you've done. You've made my first year as a board member very smooth, and we've come together as a board, and I've really appreciated that. And I was all in favor for having some continuity, and then I was reminded that that's not what we agreed to. So I just wanted to put it out there that I've really appreciated your leadership and you working with us and bringing us forward, and I think we're really... we're working really well together, and we're working really well with the administration together. And so thank you, and if I could second this, the motion, I would do that too.
My pleasure.
Sheila.
Okay, so now everybody kind of said what I wanted to say, but I still want to say it. That I agree with Patty that it's something that we should look at, how we do it. I know that last time we talked much more about who may or may not feel like they could do it, because one of the problems with rotating is, you know, it may not work that way either. And I agree with Dee Dee that, Claudia, you came in at a very difficult time,
and you understood the role of the board president as being the one to make sure that things ran smoothly and not one that was constantly putting herself out there. And I really appreciate what you have done, and I don't know what you're going to do with your time now. But,
I have a problem.
But I want to thank you.
Is there any more discussion?
Do we just discuss it among ourselves? We don't.
Right. No. It just is amongst the board. So should we go ahead and vote? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Any abstentions?
Congratulations.
Thank you.
So, Allison, are you?
Oh, I put it up here so you can get the second.
Oh, wait, I'm sorry.
You have to do the rest. Oh, yeah. There's more.
Let me do the rest first, and then I'll do it. So, the vice president, do we have a nomination for vice president?
I'd like to nominate Claudia.
Is there a second?
I'm not allowed to second something as a president, am I?
You shouldn't.
So I will. I'll second Claudia. Mm-hmm.
Is there any discussion? Patty.
Claudia, this has not taken away from the job that I believe you can do or that you will be doing should Allison not be able to fulfill it. But I do want to be careful, and in part of our governance conversation, we don't really want to ever, I think we want to think about our responsibilities as board members, whether we believe we have the time to serve or not, that we do step up and serve, because we do need other perspectives for it. It'll allow more perspective. If it continues to go back and forth, I don't know that it'll necessarily serve the board. And it has nothing to do with you, Claudia. It just has a process as a process.
So we have a first and a second on the table. Do you want to say something, Jim?
Yeah. I just want to agree with Patty that a danger is rotating back and forth between just a few people. Mm-hmm. But I think that once we have it on the governance calendar and we talk about it, we can deal with that. So.
Okay, so I'm going to take a vote, unless there's more discussion. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Any abstentions? And then we have to name the clerk.
Use a charm. I nominate Chris Monroe.
Second.
I second.
Oh, I can't do that.
I second.
Is there any discussion? Okay.
Do you accept the position?
I accept the position.
Sheila did.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Any abstentions? Okay, then I think we can adjourn
it right here.
At officially Angela as
adjourned and
10:05.
We're going back in there.
Have one more
We're going to.
And we'll begin the next meeting.
Okay.
So it's right there.
So we are going to convene the Finance Authority meeting. Call the meeting to order. We open it up to public comment. I think we're good.
And then new business would be to designate the annual officers.
Oh, yeah, sorry. I don't know. I've got her. Okay, so the new business is to designate annual officers for the Finance Authority. And...
Yes, thank you, okay. President Thompson. This is formalizing the process we've done. You as the board of Santa Cruz City Schools during the financing back, I believe, 1998 or subsequently 2000, created a financing authority to be the vehicle through which the district could then have the financing as a district. We covered briefly before where the district itself cannot itself be the vehicle through which to do the financing. Must be done through a third party. What this does is basically formalize a process that the acting board will step into the role as president also of the financing authority. That wasn't clear in the previous piece of the agreement, so it just basically says when we do this piece of it, it'll actually take those roles that are in existence that will be needed throughout that year will be done by the same board. It's similar, you'll find municipalities when the city council may sit also as the housing authority for a particular city, and they take on the role of the housing authority as well as taking off the city council hat.
Yes. So we have a recommendation to approve the designation of annual officers for the finance authority as submitted.
Move approval?
Second.
So that was Claudia's moved approval and Sheila seconded it. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstained?
Thank you.
And then the next is a resolution, Jim?
Yes. The next one just basically states that at a minimum, this authority needs to meet annually. It hadn't been done because there was no activity for the last couple of years, but that we will just meet annually and do the same meeting at least once a year to designate and appoint the officers. So we'll do it in conjunction with the reorganization meeting. So we meet the pieces of that set up at least we meet once a year. So that's what this resolution now does and amends the previous authority that was set up as a finance authority.
So the recommendation is to approve resolution FA02-1516, amending the JPA agreement of the Santa Cruz City School Finance Authority to hold the annual meeting on the same date each year as the Board of Education annual reorganization.
Move approval.
Second.
And this is a roll resolution, call. So we do a roll call.
Aye.
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 Aye. And meeting
adjourned.
Thank you.
Wow. I'm alive.
Now the pajama party starts in 15 minutes.
Well, the pizza's
go for the pizza party.
I thought I was going to be dead.
Go get your jammies on.
Okay.
Oh, I did.
Nancy does all this. Mm-hmm. Free. Mm-hmm. This is free tomorrow.